anyways, we're coming on into QSL Live tonight, folks, and I've got Matt on one line, I've got Christian on the other line, and then David's here in the studio with me, which is far more complicated than what my brain will allow. So I want someone to come over here and take a look over my shoulder to make sure that all of this is, when I say hello, we'll have everybody together. So there you go. I think that's, say hello, Christian.
Hello, Christian. How you doing?
Pretty good. Matt, you there? Hello, Matt. Are you there?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. We had to, I guess, raise him from the dead. And, of course, David is with me here.
Hello, David.
Okay, this is a very special show, folks. And we are departing from the ham radio theme tonight, but in a way, but not really, because Christian's been out there in Area 51 with like 15 scanners in the vehicle with him, monitoring all these different frequencies and everything. So I would say he at least qualifies to be on a ham radio program. So anyhow, we are all here tonight. And the only thing that I want to say, the only way I can introduce this fella is I've watched his videos on YouTube. And he goes completely, I mean, I don't think there is a road that is near the Area 51 complex that he hasn't gone down that road with a TV camera running and talking to all of the folks that are watching, telling them or informing them where he is and what's going on. And if you watch all of his videos and you get a map out, you get a pretty good understanding as to the layout of Area 51 and all that's going on out there. And I will have to say this, he probably, as far as an inside guy goes, he's probably more aware of what's going on out there than most people would be, even people that go out, you know, to occasionally investigate, because he's at this seemingly all the time. So I hope that's a good introduction. I can say that the videos he has up on YouTube are very well narrated. And if you have a chance to go up and check them out, please do so. It's Adventures with Christian. And believe me, they're adventures. So where do we start? Matt, have you got something, a question or something you want to ask? Or do you have something that you want to start in on?
I don't know. I think at this point, I would like to hear from Christian and hear what he considers to be the norm out there. I think to me that's the interesting side, is figuring out what people consider normal that live there.
There is absolutely nothing normal out there. The normal would be hearing 6 to 7 sonic booms a day, low flying aircraft, and I'm talking 100 feet off the ground. Just last week, we saw 2 F-22 Raptors 100 feet off the ground, and both of them let off 2 sonic booms, which means it was from the front of the aircraft and then the tail. So it was actually 4 of them, and it just shakes the ground out there. So that's just something you have to live with out there. Nothing is at the norm. Any given night, you could look up at the night sky, and you will see strange objects.
I was gonna bring one thing out, and that is, he just posted a new video or a newer video, and he slowed it down. He's had several people tell him, "Hey, you're photographing UFOs," so he slowed it down to frame by frame. And well, tell us about that. That's if you haven't seen it, go up and watch it up on YouTube. It's a fantastic video, and it in a way, it'll kind of blow your mind.
Well, the reason why I actually slowed it down was because I was getting so many comments saying that I was lying. I was just another one of those UFO fakery channels, because there's so many of them on YouTube. I am not a UFO channel at all, but I'm going to show what I see. Now, accidentally, I have filmed 6 times this flying craft that is flying over 5,000 miles per hour, and I've had some specialists figure that out. I actually have 2 videos on private right now that were up for like 2 years. And I've had some people, you know, comments saying, hey, Christian, you've caught this UFO going across here, and they would put down the timestamps and everything. And I would just like ignore it, you know, kind of like they're, you know, not worth my time. And one of my good friends that actually lives in Phoenix, he actually sent me pictures of these, you know, where he photo, you know, got them off the screen. And I looked at them and I just couldn't believe it. So I went back to the video, slowed it down to 25 times slow speed. And I just could not believe what I captured. So I have one. Well, there's actually two videos out there right now that show this craft. One time, it's actually right behind me as I'm about to go into a mine near Area 51. And the one video that's the closest one that you probably saw was where I was going down Black Tank Road, which is going straight towards Bald Mountain. And two crafts actually come out of pretty much thin air or the mountain. And they are flying across, I mean, the sky right there. And the problem was during this time is I was filming with 30 frames per second. So if you were to go back and watch it frame by frame, which you could do on a computer by just hitting comma and period, and that'll bring you frame by frame, you'll see this craft, which is completely saucer-shaped, go across your screen, but it'll jump, you know, from space to space on the screen because it's moving that fast.
It's moving so fast that it cannot be, the motion can't be captured
with 30 frames per second.
Right.
No.
Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, you realize how fast this thing's moving. I mean, you look at the video and you say, you know, it's like blip 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 blip, you know, across the screen, and yet you can see it. I mean, you can see the thing is like at one point it's like vertical. The next second it's like turned, you know, 170 degrees or something on its side, and it's just lickety split. I mean, it's really, really fast. So you think you've had somebody calculate this up to where the thing is actually traveling about 5,000 miles an hour?
Yes, and that's from the one video that I have on private right now, because I sent it off to MUFON to check it out. And I haven't heard back from them yet. So until I hear back from them, then I'll re-release it. But it's been up for 2 years. And I just recently put it on private, I'd say about 4 months ago, because it's too good. Because I'm overlooking the entire Tikaboo Valley from Hancock Summit, which is the mountain range leading into the Tikaboo Valley, overlooking Groom Lake Road. And I just stopped there, and I was talking about how when you're driving in, it's almost the same feeling as when you're first driving up to Hoover Dam for the first time, you know, seeing Groom Lake Road going up off into the distance into Area 51. It just kind of gives you the same feeling and everything. And I'm sitting there saying that, and then all of a sudden this thing comes right out of Area 51, and it flies a good 5+ miles all the way across. So, I mean, just a perfect saucer shape. You know, wish I would have sent it to you prior to this.
Well, you know, and that's interesting. You say saucer-shaped. And that is that this is what Bob Lazar reported.
Right.
These type of craft that he was doing reverse engineering on, okay? Now, you know, I'm going to tell some tales out of school here. I talked to Pat from the Little Alien, who I think is a very credible lady, all right? And she tells me she believes every word that Bob Lazar says. She thinks he's a very truthful, as she says, young man. So, I don't know. I mean...
She's told me the same thing, yeah.
So, I mean, this is... it's not just ironic. Well, let me say this. I was going to turn the reverb down here. It sounds like I'm in Mammoth Cave. But anyways, Matt and David have gone out to Area 51 and set up these SLRs. Well, Matt, I'm going to let you tell, you and David can tell the story as to what kind of cameras they are. And the first they were out there, they got these, I mean, the most incredible things I've ever seen. When I looked at the video, I call it video, but it was like stills, you know, rapid fire stills. Looking at the film, it almost scared me. You know, I mean, I was looking at that as, yeah. You know, are the men in black going to come after these guys because they've got this, you know? But, I mean, it was like, as soon as I saw it, my first impression is, boy, they've taken pictures of something they probably shouldn't be taking pictures of. I don't know, but, man, you guys tell the story, and I don't know who to go first.
Well, the one thing I'll say is going out there is always a what I would consider to be a treat. I enjoy going out. I enjoy sitting there in the middle of the night when it's not a windy night. The windy nights in the desert that are cold, you know, you go from 90 degrees in the day down to, you know, 45, and it's a lot of wind. That wind is cold. The one thing I will say, though, is the DSLRs we have two T1 eyes, two T3 eyes. We've got about four that go in a variety of different lenses. Video at night just does not capture what you can capture with time-lapse photography. Now, there is downward disadvantages to using time-lapse photography in the sense that you only capture what is there, but the stuff that we've captured, I've captured strange objects that have flown across an entire screen within 10 seconds. We've captured things that have lit up the entire sky. David, you can tell Christian the story of the exploding objects.
Get up on that mic.
Well, I know how to use a microphone.
I'll end up with them.
All right, so, again, I enjoy the heck out of looking at the stars out there. You know, it is just beautiful. I've got some nice binoculars that I use, and, you know, I usually just lay on my back, and, man, Matthew's not kidding about the desert out there. It gets cold, so, you know, I layer up.
Well, you got to understand.
It sure does, yes.
Christian camps out there at some of these places overnight, so, you know.
Yeah, it's, you know.
All the time, yeah.
So, you know, big props to you for dealing with that, you know, type of temperature differential out there, because, it does. And you stay out there for a little while, and it starts to get to you. But, anyways, we were out there the one night, and, you know, we were watching these orbs, if you would, kind of pop up over the horizon. And we just kept watching them and seeing these things kind of float over there, and they're just doing all kinds of weird things. And then the grand finale, if you would. If you've ever been in a lightning storm and you've seen a transformer blow up, and you've seen that kind of halo that gives off, we saw one of those orbs like go straight to the ground. And then we had that giant halo. Now, this isn't, I mean, this was just huge. That was the best description that I could give of it, of a transformer blowing up. But it was so much bigger than anything that I had ever seen before. And it was just amazing, you know, and it just scared the heck out of me.
So I guess they started about, from what I could tell, on this kind of maneuvers that they were doing around 11 o'clock. How normal is that out there?
That's actually not very normal during red flag. I don't know if you guys might have been there during red flag, because then they'll do a daytime operation and a nighttime operation. But at 11 o'clock at night, that's not usually the norm, but it's still in the Nevada test site. So Tonopah is just right up there. They're going all the time. So, yeah, it does happen, but it's not really the norm.
Well, the thing I saw were these objects that had like three or four lights. It looked like on the back of them. That could have been the front. I don't know. And they would move around. I mean, you'd have one frame, you know, they'd be to the left. The next frame, they're to the right. and the next frame they're back to the left, and the next frame they're up or down or something. And these things moved in such a way that you could tell, I mean, looking at them, this was not, I mean, they moved erratically up, down, right, left. So there's no known aircraft that I know that can do that, that can move in that rapid succession and move at that speed. I guess that was the thing that, and those are the pictures they need to send you, because when they showed them to me, I found them, I found the things to be scary to look at almost.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people say, because I've caught that also, and I've seen that many times out there, they'll say drones from Creech Air Force Base. Well, the drones we know of don't move that fast. So, you know, I mean, I've seen things do maneuvers exactly what you just explained, and there's no drone out there that could move at speeds that what I'm seeing out there and what you observed out there.
Well, they had something out there that looked like a big, gigantic ball of light that was up in the air. You guys described that. I mean, it was like orange in color on the photograph. And the one night we were out there, I saw a little bit of that, but not like what you guys captured.
Right, yeah, that one night it was quite the light show out there. We had all kinds of things going on. And you know it's going to happen because... what we've noticed is all commercial aircraft just stops all over the place. You know, you don't see anything for a little while, and then that's when you're going to end up seeing the light show going on out there. Then all of a sudden, then you start seeing commercial aircraft again, and you don't see anything else. Yeah, you know, so it's a really a wild experience to go through, and you know, and you, it's not like you're really expecting it. You're hoping you're going to get the light show, but you know, you go out there and then all of a sudden here it is, and it's definitely freaky. And I can understand, you know, just looking at these pictures and you know, even hearing you talk about the one video you've got, it is so easy for someone who hasn't seen this kind of stuff to say, oh, you're just faking this, you know, or you know, you've left out frames, or you know, they're trying to debunk anything you've got. But until they actually see this kind of stuff, you know, for themselves, it's hard to not believe that there is wild stuff out there.
Yeah, you just can't convince everybody what you've seen. Even if you have it on video, you still can't convince people of it. You know, in the one video I have, there's two crafts that actually take off, and one is actually a triangle, almost like the TR-3B, which is supposed to be our next, you know, aircraft to come out that, you know, is taken over from the Aurora, the stealth program, everything. So there's one saucer-shaped craft, and then there's a triangular craft that takes off with it at the same time. So not sure what I got there. And then on another video, it was during Red Flag.
Why don't you explain to the... No, seriously, not to interrupt you, but explain to our listeners what Red Flag is, because, you know, this is terminology that you're using, and the average listener that's just tuned
right,
in has
sure.
No idea what you're talking about.
Right. Red Flag, pretty much to put it, is the premier air-to-air combat missions to where the United States, Nellis Air Force Base, invites out its closest allies, which is usually Australia, Great Britain, and, well, that's what it's basically been for the last few years. But we've had Canada out, we've had Israel out, but they all come, which Red Flag is going on right now, and they come out and they'll fly from Nellis and they'll fly from the NTTR, which is the Tonopah Test Site, Area 52, and they'll both meet right over Rachel. Rachel is where the little alien is. But on their way there, they'll actually simulate having SAM missiles being shot at them. And then they're actually shooting at targets. And there's a commander up above in an AWACS jet that is telling them, you're dead, you know, or you took out this missile silo. And then once they get to Rachel, they actually start a dogfight. There's aggressors, and then there's the good guys. And the aggressors, because we have MiGs that we've either captured or pilots from Russia have, you know, brought them in, you know, said, hey, I don't want to be part of this anymore, and gave them to us. And we fly MiGs against, you know, these American, Australian, and British fighters. It's the Top Gun, the real Top Gun, almost like the movie, but much more.
How can it be much more of the movie?
is there any telltale signs that red flag may be coming up?
Yeah, it's always posted.
Oh, it's
Nellis has red flag, which is usually 3 times a year. Sometimes it's 4 times a year. So it's red flag 119 right now, meaning it's the first one of 2019 going on now,
currently.
And they'll also have green flag, and they also have yellow flag. But red flag is the big one. And, I mean, this year is it really seems to be one of the biggest I've seen.
So are you out there, are you looking at it? I know you put a video up of all these different aircraft. It was, you know, watching it to me was very confusing because I don't know anything about these things, you know. But it just seemed like there was one airplane right after, I call them airplanes, one right after another in succession. And I was just thinking, I was wondering if you had recorded that all at one sitting, or if that was a, you know, like multiple sittings that you were able to get all of those. But I mean, every size and shape imaginable in the sky.
Goodness. Yeah, I got the U-2 spy plane. I mean, I'm completely into jets. I didn't know they were still flying the U-2 spy plane. You know, that's what Gary Powers flew over Russia. You know, that's why Area 51 is there, is due to the U-2 spy plane. And I got the U-2 spy plane just, I would say, not even 100 yards over my head, you know. And then the stealth bomber, you know, the big B-1 bomber where they have to, you know, open up the flaps right in the front to slow down and then parachute to stop. Yeah, that's a really good video that people aren't looking at, you know, that...
If you're into aircraft, you go to YouTube and get on Adventures with Christian, and you're going to see that video up there. I sat down. You know, we were sitting in the den, and Holly had the volume up real loud on the stereo, so it was like I was right there. You know, I mean, these things would fly over, and you could hear going from left channel to right channel. You know, it was pretty cool. So anyhow, yeah. That's you know. So that explains red flag. I don't know where we were. Were we somewhere? Well, let me ask you this, Christian. What do you think about these things you've got that are saucer shaped and they look just like, you know, the classic UFO, the George Adamski ship or the Bob Lazar ship, and that's what they look like. What do you make of these things?
Well, since now that I've accidentally filmed them 6 times now, and every time it's been an accident. And what's strange about it, I never obviously see them because they're moving too fast, but I never hear them. Well, my feelings about them, I definitely feel it's something the military is testing out. And for some reason, this is just my gut feeling. They want them to be filmed. Why else would they have me be, you know, filming them 6 times now?
That was really, you know, obvious. I mean, like they were posing for you.
That's almost how I feel. I mean, you know, I was literally filming myself talking, saying I'm about to go inside this mine, which is right next to Area 51, and it shows my face, my Jeep in the back, and there goes one right across. So, you know, is it something they want to slowly let out? You know, almost like the stealth fighter, there's people camping out near the Tonopah test range. And that's where our first footage came from, was just regular people filming them.
Well, talking about them wanting someone to see them, okay? We were out there at Area 51, and we got a whole handful of witnesses. One particular person I can mention by name is Mike Erickson, who works for the Wheatstone Corporation. Now, we had a whole bunch of guys went out there, and I'm in the van doing this, you know, play-by-play. That's what I'm doing. And
like a baseball game, yeah.
And all these guys are outside, and Mike's in the front seat with me. And all of a sudden, you know, I mean, now Matt walks around, okay? Matt walks around, and somehow he got word, because we had satellite out there, a big satellite truck. So we had perfect internet access, if you can imagine, high-speed internet out right in the middle of nowhere. And he makes his way over to the truck and says, we got an email, says they're listening on the base. And I'm like, yeah, well, maybe some crank, but the IP address and all that kind of checked out, because we were unable to trace the email, if that was what I understand. Anyway, so Matt pokes his head in the truck, says, hand me that microphone. So I gave it to him, and he says, okay, you guys, if you're listening out there, we'd like to see you put on kind of a little show for us here, because we're out here watching, you know. And he left, and I didn't think anything of it. I mean, I really didn't. I mean, I just, you know, just I was just thinking one of those things, and I mean, I didn't think he was crazy. I just didn't give it much thought. So right. I would say it was 5 minutes went by. And all of a sudden, all these guys outside of the van start screaming. And I'm like, oh, my God, what is this? You know, I mean, and they just keep screaming. Now, David, you're outside somewhere laying on your back with your binoculars. Did you hear all these guys cutting?
Oh, yeah. I was hearing them go crazy.
And- yeah. So I said to Mike, he's sitting in the front seat, I said, Mike, go check it out. See what's going on out there. So he leaves. The next thing I know, I hear Mike yelling outside. I thought, man, we are in trouble now. But a little bit of time went by, and I don't know where Matt was. God, he could have came over and told me what was going on. But I'm just sitting there, and I'm trying to ad-lib, if you can imagine this. Ad-lib this broadcast from Area 51 with a whole bunch of radio engineers outside screaming their lungs out. So finally, I don't know who came back over to the truck and said, well, here what happened. He said it was like the whole sky caught fire. Everything, we were looking straight up in the sky and seeing nothing but flames overhead, what looked like flames, and they were engulfing the entire sky. Well, I probably would have been screaming, too, if I'd have seen that, you know?
Absolutely.
But I don't know. Matt, were you watching that outside? Were you seeing it as well? I've never asked.
Yeah, that. I'm actually trying to find the photographs of that because I've got them and see if we can't post them online. And my question for Christian is, are you in a spot right now where if I post something online, can you actually go see him?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm convinced so, Christian can do anything. Okay.
God, thank you. I wish I could.
But, no, I mean, that was scary. I didn't see it. But then out the front window, my future daughter-in-law says, look! You know, and I look out the front window, and there's this thing in the sky. I'll call it a thing. It was a rectangular-shaped illumination that looked like a door, you know, and it folded over on itself and folded on itself. We counted seven times it did that, and then it just was gone. You know, I don't know if it was a
wow.
I don't know if it was a projection or if it was a real deal, the real thing, you know. And there was some other object we saw that looked like one of those speaking spells, or no, not a speaking spell, Simon Says thing, you know, whether it's divided up in like three sections and they light up and, you know, the thing talks or says something and you're supposed to get it in the right order or whatever. It looked round. It was round like that, and it was divided up, and it had different colors in those sections. Well, I figured that was their way of putting on a show, but I'll tell you, it was convincing because it scared the daylights out of me, and I don't scare easy, but I was just, you know, it makes you feel helpless when you see something like that. You see this big, gigantic display in the sky, you know, and you see that, and it's like you do. You feel helpless. You feel dwarfed by it. You know, it's like, oh, my goodness.
So I'd like to hear from Christian on basically the stories of camping out there, being harassed, what all does that look like and what all does that detail when that happens?
The last time I camped out there was actually last week, and I like to camp out right across from Campfire Hill, which Campfire Hill is, I would say, a couple hundred yards from the main gate on Groom Lake Road. And it used to get a lot worse. I believe the camo dudes are pretty much used to me by now, but they still, you know, will, you know, come over and they'll block my only way down from the mountain if I did want to leave, you know, due to them antagonizing me.
Oh.
So they'll show up, they'll put their bright lights on me, and then they'll turn their lights off, and then they'll creep a little bit more forward, flash me again, completely turn off their lights. And last week there was absolutely no moon, so I couldn't see them at all. And when they turned their lights back on, they were actually just about 50 feet in front of me.
Now, let's back up just a second here. He's talking about camo dudes. Now, a lot of people are not going to understand what that means. So let's talk about what is a camo dude. And, you know, I know they drive the white Dodge trucks or the Raptors or whatever, and it's kind of awesome looking coming down the road at you. But describe that, what they are and who they are.
Camo dudes are the security for Area 51. And the way I explain them, they are the security for Area 51. But they're the only people that do a 100% perfect job, meaning nobody gets on that base. So they're ex-military, they're ex-special forces, and they're pretty much just security guards that aren't allowed on the base. They can go in the inner perimeter a little ways, but they can't go actually onto the base. And they have no jurisdiction, because as soon as you leave that border, that's all BLM land, which belongs to every American citizen. But they'll follow you. Well, they followed me. I mean, I would say 12 miles outside of the base, you know, all around these dirt roads and everything. So they have direct orders not to actually engage with the public and not to let their face be shown. Every time I get a camo dude close to me, they do everything to hide their faces. Last week was one of the best ones, where I caught four of them coming down Groom Lake Road, and one of them held up a cardboard box over their head. You know, they always put their visors down. They always put their caps further down on their faces. But they also love to pass you on the road. The roads out there, well, the roads I take out there, are pretty much just made for one vehicle. So I'll be going down there, and then out of nowhere, a camo dude is coming towards me about 60 miles per hour, and I have to get out of his way, and he just dusts me out. He shoots me with rocks, everything. So they're just a private security firm.
All right, so where does... All right, so me and Matthew have gone around a little bit. Where do these roads come from? You know, who makes them, who maintains them? We've gone on a couple of different dirt roads just driving around, but, you know, you've got more more experience out there.
Lord heavens, he does.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't like calling Groom Lake Road anymore, because it's really not Groom Lake Road. Even though you look on Google Earth, it'll say Groom Lake Road. It is actually Groom Mine Road. And that was built by the Sheehan family during 1889, when Ulysses S. Grant was still president, is when they started their mine out there, and they just lost their mine 3 years ago to Area 51. So they built that road from Alamo which would be the 93 freeway, all the way through where they did all the nuclear tests during the 50s and 60s, and all the way into the 90s, and all the way to Indian Springs. But one day they were coming home, and they were taking Groom Mine Road, and they noticed that there was a guard shack, and they were stopped and they were searched, and ever since then they did it, but they were very patriotic people. So they just allowed it, and they kept on mining as much as they could until their crusher, which crushes all their ore, because most of the mining here in Nevada is hard rock mining. So you have to crush it. You have to have a stamp mill. And they had, I believe, a 20 stamp mill stamp. And it was blown up one day. And, of course, they knew it was Area 51. And Area 51 said, yeah, they did it, but it was an accident that a fuel tank fell off of one of their jets. So that pretty much put them out of business right there.
Oops.
But they were still living there.
So I'm going to tell you right now, if you go to the website, QSOradioshow.com or TedRandall.com, there is right on the homepage right now, it says Area 51 photos. And if you go up there right now, you can actually see these photos that David and I took of one of the previous years. And they're up there. I just grabbed some of the decent ones that I felt that would be good just to have for you guys to be able to see. And I just quickly snapped them. They were shot in raw, so I had to open them up and I had to put in there. But the first one has these flare-like objects that are circular. And as you progress forward in these photographs, you can see the brilliance and how well they are. And as you begin to look at them, there's one that does a full figure eight in the sky. Like it does a full figure eight, and you can see it. And you can see that whatever they're using as far as propulsion is got to be some kind of massive jet. And I don't think this is I honestly don't think this is like just normal aircraft, because you look at the turns that you can see in these images. It's mind blowing. Real quick, I do want to say this. There's a couple people who emailed in while Christian is looking that up. If you want to email us, say again.
What's that site again? I'm sorry. What's that site you wanted me to go to?
Either TedRandall.com or QSOradioshow.com. And they're right there on the homepage. Real quick, I was going to say, for anybody out there listening, send us an email. I think the email address is email@wtww.us. And if you wanted to call, as an experiment, I think the phone's routed to my studio here. It's 1-833-390-5085, 1-833-390-5085. And that number, once again, 1-833-390-5085. If I actually did route them right, which I can't test while I'm on the air, we might take a few phone calls depending on our time frame that we got here. So, anyways, where were we at before I interrupted with the fact that I posted these photos?
The one thing I wanted to point out, and I had started to go there, and then I interrupted myself because I have ADD real bad. Anyways, but Christian said it was almost like those UFO photos that he's got. It was almost as if they were posing for him. And then when Matt came over and made the announcement or grabbed the mic and just said, "Hey, guys, put on a show." We got a show. I mean, we really did. So, I mean, I think to some degree, they want to be seen to some degree. It's like, why have they named this road the Extraterrestrial Highway? Why do they have this gigantic sign up there? You know, I mean, it's like, it's kind of like they're going, hey, looky here, looky here. But then when you get close, here come the camo dudes, you know.
Exactly.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyhow.
Yeah.
And I had difficulty getting to the site, man. It's weird. And David had the same problem.
It just
would not open up. And we went to look at it. It just wouldn't open. So I don't know. So I'm in the image gallery now, and I can see... Well, I got one photo up here.
Yeah, there's the one with the two orbs, which was very common for that night.
Well, if you look at it, you'll see a fuzz that looks like it's around the aircraft, and there's two lights on the back end of that aircraft that are on. You know.
Now the other thing to take note is, as you look, you see the two lights that are above us. This is, and that's going towards Christian, so you know that's going towards the little alien. As I'm shooting this photograph, are you seeing the same thing we're seeing?
No, I'm actually on Ted Randall, and it says "Welcome to my world of painting." So this can't be your site. I went to tedrandall.com.
R-A-N-D-A-L-L.
Yeah. Try it again.
Well, now Christian hasn't been around computers too long. He knows all about Area 51, but yeah. Now the second photo I've got is, you can see the thing has swept across the camera and left a trail behind, and it's real clear to see. And of course, you can see that you're getting some Starfield effect from the sky. Yeah, hopefully you'll get hooked up here pretty quick and you can see them. But it's almost, I mean, it's an uncanny thing. It's like, you know, are they wanting to be seen? You know, and if so... But let me ask you a question while you're looking. Have you ever had a camo dude, like... Well, they don't want their faces seen, but have you ever had conversation with one or anything like that? I've wondered about that. Or have you ever talked to anyone that has?
Yes, I've had a conversation with two of them while I was waiting in Ash Springs to get food, and they're very nice guys. You know, obviously we didn't talk about the base or anything like that, but they knew who I was, and I obviously knew who they were. I pretty much followed them in there.
I wondered about that. I thought maybe what would be fun to do would be to take, I mean, you've got some pretty close-up pictures of faces where they're hunched down in the truck, you know, and all that sort of thing, but you can still make their face out. It'd be interesting to take all those face shots and put them up like in a gallery on the web, you know, and, you know, just, you know, make a little note underneath there. Hello to all these fellows that are the men in camouflage at Area 51. I think that would be that'd be kind of cool, because you've got quite a few shots of them, of different ones. As they pass by, Christian, his camera catches pictures of the entire truck. But then, excuse me, I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on here with my throat. But those trucks and the bus can be seen parked in Alamo.
Yeah.
And you tell us a little bit about Alamo. That's another thing that's kind of a mysterious thing.
Well, there's real big ties between Alamo and Area 51. The town of Alamo, I would say, has a population, and this is just a rough guesstimate. I've never looked it up, but I would say... maybe 1,500 to 2,000 people, if that. And they stay real hush-hush about the base. I really enjoy the game of baseball. And so where the bus parks, which is at the annex building and the sheriff's department right there, going down that road is where their high school is right there. I noticed they were having a baseball game one day, so I stopped in. I wanted to see what their division was like, so I wanted to see the baseball game, stopped there. And as soon as I sat down in the crowd, I saw two guys staring at me, and I looked over at them, and it was two camo dudes, and they were sitting next to each other. And I could tell they were, you know, looking, you know, kind of uneasy, as if I was going to start filming them or something, you know, which I would never do. They're sitting there watching their sons play baseball. But there were jets doing maneuvers right over us, and there was actually sonic booms going on. Nobody on either side even noticed them. Of course they noticed them, but they wouldn't look up. They wouldn't act like they were actually there, anything. It's very strange how they act about it. And Alamo used to actually sell, you know, Area 51 paraphernalia, swag, whatever you want to call it. And they recently just stopped because, you know, there's been a lot of trouble out there with that bus. Because they do park it at night right out there in the open.
So I wonder
now,
the people
when that, we go ahead, when Matt. We used to go, we would go and stop. I think it's a I'm looking here right now, actually. It's like a Sinclair gas station, and they used to sell Area 51 or UFO driver's licenses and all kinds of, you know, little things like that. And, you know, I've got a couple of things like
pins, that. Yeah.
I've got my Area 51 driver's license. I do. I have carry it with me all the time. So,
I mean, So you're saying they used to do much more than just the driver's licenses and stuff like that?
Yeah, there would be a selection of shirts. You can get hat, bumper stickers. Yeah.
Now, Pat has all that stuff at Little Alien. And there's that other place out there that they call it the Alien Research Center. It's in a Quonset hut, and it's never been open. Every time we've gone by there, it's always been closed.
Yeah, you know, I mean, for me, and I'm there every 2 weeks driving through there, it's closed quite a bit, but now he seems to keep it open more often lately. But for a while there, yeah, he was closed a lot.
So I'm sitting here looking at Google Maps, and what's hysterical to me, right on the other side of the Sinclair, there's a fitness center there, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 white pickup trucks here on Google Streets and Trips. I mean, it's like you couldn't get any more obvious. I mean, these are like, these are obviously all. Yeah, I mean, you can sit here. I mean, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there's a little service station next to it. And oh, here's another three more over here. And I'm just sitting here on Streets and Trips. So that's just amazing to me.
Christian, have you got to the website yet? Have you got to see are you up there where the pictures are?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at them.
All right, now in the image gallery, I think it's the second click where it says 3, 4. There's a pair of lights that look green above. You can see the automobile. The camera's kind of at a distance, and then the automobile is in the, or one of them is when in the, maybe that's
right,
a van.
Right, yeah.
I can't really see. Anyways, that green, those two green lights, as you can see, based on the way the perspective of the picture is, that's quite a large object. And it's down kind of low. I mean, you know, it's not, it's not thousands of feet in the air. I mean, it's down low. I haven't scrolled through all of them, but I think you'll look and see some of these pictures. I think are really, really impressive. I mean, as far as
they're very impressive. I mean, they stand out. Just saying hello is exactly what they're doing.
It's so the time. So the time-lapse photography that I use on these things, and as you go through them, the shutters on those, because I'm using a 2.8 lens, I leave it open for about 8 to 7 seconds. And that gets the Starfield background. And you can compare on my raw footage where you're looking at them, you can actually see the Starfield in the back move. And anybody who's any analyst or anything along those lines can sit there and tell you, you know, basically – you know, this is these are legitimate pictures based upon, you know, the fact that, you know, we're able to see, you know, the star field and so on and so forth, and it all matches up. And I've got the raw footage as well, which is also really nice because sure. they're basically linear files, and you can drop those up a few extra S-stops. But what's most amazing to me at looking at these is the ones, and I tried to group them together, and you can compare the star field as you move through the one where all of a sudden we get the huge, you know, bright flash of light off to the one side, then it goes away, but you can see the streak of the aircraft across the sky, and you can see where they moved. And then in the next photograph, you can see this streak that is almost a 90-degree turn. It's the most amazing thing I have ever seen. And, of course, we could see it and hear it, but there's no human in that thing. There's no way. Or it's some kind of technology.
Right. No human body would be able to take that kind of turn.
Unless they figured out a way to remove gravity. And in the last picture, you'll see the very last one, you can see the star field and you can see our three vehicles out there. You can see where this one aircraft hit like it did, like an almost a full 90. And it's like, it's literally almost a 90-degree turn. And
it is.
There's no aerodynamics out there for that.
I wish you could have got some of those pictures where you see the three lights on the back of these objects. There's like a whole bunch of those. I don't know if they're readily available from the camera that you've got or the what you've saved it on. But those things are, I mean, that's the stuff that creeped me out when I looked at those things, because they've got three lights and they change. I mean, there's like a I'm just going to say a red, a blue, and a yellow. And then in the next shot, it's a red, blue, and a green. And the next shot, it's, you know what I'm talking about, Matt? Those
I have to convert. I told it to convert, but it's got about another hour to do so.
Okay, we'll just keep talking. So this have you ever seen those, Christian? Have you ever seen those kinds of objects?
I've seen very similar to when I was, again, camping out on Grumine Road, and like you guys described orbs, I had two to three orbs, I believe it was just two, coming straight at me. It actually scared me half to death. But they were coming straight towards me. They weren't far off the ground at all. And as soon as they got within, I don't know, I would say a couple hundred yards, they both just went straight into the ground. And then last week when I was driving down to the front gate, and I was doing this at night, no moon again, I saw off to my right side that there was two white lights that actually had a yellow outline to them, and I was actually able to film them. I stopped, started filming them. They would just go up, down, right, left, and zigzag every other way, but it was almost as if it was a massive basketball player out there bouncing a basketball, just up and down, and then putting it between his legs and playing basketball. But it was some kind of craft doing some crazy maneuvers.
And you realize that you're talking about something that is probably moving thousands of miles an hour.
Right, absolutely.
Going to the ground and back up.
Because some of the things that we saw out there, you know, you don't see any deacceleration. You know, it's not like it's slowing down to make the turn or the zigzag. No, I mean, this thing is like, it does, you know, visually, it doesn't look like it slows down at all. There is no speed difference as to when it makes its maneuver. It is just it's wild. It's baffling for me to even be able to look at these things and just be able to comprehend what is going on up there.
Yeah, you see, these are the things that I would love to explain to my viewers, so I'm so glad that I'm on the show right now. you know, that I would love to explain to all of them the things that I see out there. I've actually mentioned a couple of things, but it's so hard to explain things that you see out there that you do not have on film and then explain it to people. I mean, that you'll see out there almost on a nightly basis. And what these things are doing, and like you said, they're not slowing down a bit to do a 90-degree turn. They're not slowing down going straight towards the ground. They don't slow down. They just bounce right back up at the same speed.
And for folks that are just tuned in, I just want to make this little note. We are talking to Christian. His website, or I guess I'm going to say where you can find him on YouTube, is under Adventures of Christian, or Adventures with Christian. I'm sorry. I'm sitting here listening to all this, and my mind is being fried. Adventures with Christian up on YouTube, and you'll see the most phenomenal videos. If you want to know what Area 51 is all about, you watch these things, because he goes everywhere around that whole campus. I mean, it's amazing to watch these videos. I mean, you're going to be riveted to your seat or your bed or whatever while you're watching them. It's incredible. And the other one, to get a little word in here too, for the Little Alien. So if you ever have a chance and you want to take some time off and go kick back and watch the skies at Area 51, take some time and visit the Little Alien. They're in Rachel, and there's only one of them out there, so you can't get confused. And the lady that runs the place, her name is Pat, and she's one of the most wonderful people you could possibly ever meet. And she has to hold the fort down there, and they make alien burgers, and I don't know what else they have. They have all kind of swag out there, so if you want to go back out there, if you want to go out there and grab a bunch of stuff to send to friends and relatives, well, we picked up, oh my God, I don't know how many cups and different things we bought while we were out there, but it's the Little Alien in Rachel, and you just go up on the internet and Google them, Little Alien in Rachel, although they spell it weird, but I don't care how you spell it, you're going to get it. And we've done one broadcast from the Little Alien, and Pat was our co-host, and I don't know, I really enjoyed the daylights of the talking to this lady. I mean, she can tell you stories. Oh my goodness gracious,
she enjoys telling these stories too.
Yeah, and she's the one. I mean, she up and down vouches for the fact that she believes that Bob Lazar is the real deal. So, and I, you know, hearing her tell it, you know, it makes me believe it, because, you know, she's a no-nonsense person. And she started talking about people that come in from the base and eat there and whatnot, and how she doesn't want to violate anyone's trust because she doesn't want to see someone lose their job or whatever, you know. So, and, you know, we've had this other fellow, too, that was out there that did a lot. I mean, matter of fact, did videos up on Tickaboo Peak, and that was Glenn Campbell, and I suppose you know him pretty well.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, what do you think it is that causes us to have so much interest and intrigue about this place? I mean, you're out there doing all kinds of stuff, traveling all over the place. What is it that that lights your fire about Area 51?
Well, it was the base that never existed, you know, until 1994. And it's just so well hidden. I mean, they could not have picked a better place to put a secret Air Force base. Anywhere. Yeah, I've been to Dugway in Utah, where you could see the entire facility pretty much. But Area 51, you know, you got to look at it from, like you said, Tickaboo Peak, which is 27 miles away. And still, you better have a really high power camera to be able to get a good picture of that. You know, it's just, it's such an intriguing place, you know, to where, you know, if they're not doing something so top secret out there, why would their security, a camo dude, chase me or you 12 miles outside of the base, or even more than 12 miles. So it's, there's a lot of mystery with Area 51.
Now, there's a video up there where they're holding where a couple of guys on motorcycles, and these camo dudes pull up aggressively, and they get out, and they pull their guns and all that kind of stuff. Now, I've heard it rumored people say that's a fake video, that's not real.
It can't be.
What's your take on it? I mean, you know which one I'm talking about. I'm just asking your take on that.
Yeah, that's what I refer to as the Mountain Gate, and that's actually Stuart Well Road. But that's one of the most secluded gates out there. So if the camo dudes wanted to have their way with you right there, they could easily do it. You know, they could easily off you, which of course they wouldn't, you know, and nobody would know any different, you know. But okay, it was a father and son that used to go to Area 51 actually quite a bit. They both live in Arizona, and they went up to the Mountain Gate, and the father parked his bike literally centimeters away from the border right there. And I guess prior to them going on this one trip, they went to the same gate, and I guess both of them saw a little gleam from like a scope from almost a sniper sitting on the hill right there. So now it's kind of called Sniper Hill right now, which I climbed last weekend, and that was one heck of a hike. I climbed it for a reason. But the reason why they couldn't have faked that video, okay? All right, first of all, they would have had to have gotten somebody to rent a Dodge Hemi and to have those big tires on it. And then to play a skit like that right there, there would be no way they could do that even for half as long as what it went on. The real camo dudes would have been there. You know, especially with somebody, if it was fake guns or not, if the camo dudes would have seen that, they would have certainly came, kept them there until the Lincoln County Sheriff came.
But now the one camo dude in the film looks like he needs to go on a diet.
yeah, he does, yeah.
So I wondered how they hire those people. I mean, you know, I thought, well, that guy would not qualify for our local police department or our state police. You know, but that, I guess, you know, doing this kind of security is a different thing. You know, it doesn't necessarily require a chase on foot, although it could. I mean, you know, you just never know. But
right.
There's another video up there with a guy in a wheelchair that goes over the line and turns around and comes back.
Yes.
And then there's another one up there of two old women, two elderly ladies that got in they just drove right across the line and went in. And I never did hear the outcome on that. I don't know if anyone did as to what happened to them. But, I mean, I could see some elderly ladies saying, oh, we want to go see.
Yeah, and just saying, hey, I want to see this base, you know, and those teenagers, you know, seem like teenagers, warned them, stay behind us, you know, don't pass us. And as soon as they stopped, the two old ladies just blew right through the border, you know, and the camo dudes took chase. From what I've heard is, and of course I'm sure this is true, there were two old ladies, you know, that the Lincoln County Sheriff came and just gave them both $700 tickets and let them go, but kept them pretty much the whole day.
See, I just, to me, it seems like, you know, it seems to me that I've seen signs that said deadly force authorized. But now lately...
Used to have them up.
Lately, I don't see those on the signs. So I wonder what that's all about.
They got in some kind of trouble. I can't imagine Area 51 got in trouble, but I guess... because the base was getting so much attention that they decided, hey, it might be a good idea if we take down, you know, use of deadly force authorized. Because, I mean, one day they were there, the next day they were gone.
Well, you know, I wondered, you know, because I hadn't heard, up until just recently, I'd never heard of anybody getting actually shot at, you know, by a camo dude. But then this recent incident, tell folks about that, because I've only got bits and pieces of that, what took place, but I guess the guy went inside. You know, he was that. What's the city? It's almost like a city that's inside of Area 51.
Well, it's all right. Area 51 sits inside what's called the NTTR, the Nevada Test and Training Range, which is almost 1,400 square miles. Now, the main gate to all of this, and it's mainly the main gate also to where they did all the nuclear explosions in the 50s, 60s, and so on. So it's just really, I would say it's about 60 miles north of Las Vegas, and it would be on the west side of Area 51. It's called Mercury, Nevada, and there is a town right there. So you can exit the 95 freeway, which takes you from Las Vegas to Reno. You can exit right there at Mercury, and it says Mercury. And as soon as you exit, there's a guard shack right there telling you this is a U.S. installation, Air Force installation, you know, do not enter. And this guy went, he blew past that. I guess he got 8 miles in, and now we're never going to know for sure who actually stopped him. I'm sure it was camo dudes. They stopped him. They were able to get him out of his car. And from what the news said and the paper said, that he got out of his car, he put his hands up, he had something in his right hand, which I think was his cell phone. And they kept ordering him to get down on his chest, and he wouldn't, and they shot him dead.
Now, that's the first story I've ever heard about somebody getting shot. Because most people, though, I mean, most people, somebody pulls a gun on them, and they're gonna get down and do what they're told, at least, I mean, for the most part. So if a person does that, if they get down, they do what they're told, they're not going to get shot, at least I wouldn't think. But Matt's had some thoughts about that, too, in regards to the fact that if these guys are, you know it also comes down to the fact that they're just security guards, but, you know, how much authorization as security guards do they have at Area 51, and who gives them that authority? I mean, we don't know. We don't know anything much about them, but, man, you had some thoughts about that because you're up on all the carry laws and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, Camo Dudes, the security at Area 51 and the entire Nevada test site, they have more authority than, I would say, any police officer, any military police, anything, because Area 51 has more authority than the President of the United States. They don't have to answer to President Trump, and they've never had to answer to any other president.
Well, I know Bill Clinton was on Jimmy Kimmel or something like that. They asked him a bunch of questions, and he was like, you know, very evasive. And then, of course, Obama was on there, too, and they asked him questions, and he had the same, you know, actually, he was more truthful. He said, they asked him, well, why is it that Bill Clinton, you know, wouldn't kind of own up to it? And Obama said, well, that's what we're told to say. So I wouldn't doubt that for a moment, you know. But, you know, you figure you've got a lot of high security area out there because of, you know, they're developing weapons, I'm sure, or they're developing something. But there's always this question about an alien presence out there, you know. And, you know, and Matt, you never made the comment. I asked you to make your comment about that, and I didn't hear you. The ICOM 7300. And now this is a contester's dream. It's a high-performance HF transceiver with a compact design. It doesn't miss a weak signal under any circumstances. And it's got the waterfall function and the real-time spectrum scope. Man, it's exactly what you need if you're a contester. ICOM has the reputation of being incredible in the performance and also the service they provide to you. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/amateur. That's ICOMAmerica.com/amateur.
You know, there are very few hobbies that can stick around for a century. But amateur radio is one of the growing survivors, with about 3 million currently active hams worldwide. Most of us know about the public service aspect of our hobby and how we can help neighbors by providing emergency communications. It works when nothing else does. But there's more to it than that. Hams are part of a worldwide community that spread goodwill with some of the nicest, smartest, and most interesting people that you'll ever meet. Of course, you know, it's easy to interest people in ham radio, but then there's that pesky test. And for many, that's a big stop sign. Those technical questions might as well be a foreign language to a newcomer. And frankly, a lot of the teaching tools aren't very good. But now, thankfully, there's a game changer. It's called Ham Test Online, and it turns the gobbledygook into something that's pretty easy to understand, and that makes getting licensed really easy. And not only is it inexpensive, but it comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. You get your ticket, or you get your money back. And in a recent independent study of new hams, 97% gave Ham Test Online 5 stars. So if you've been putting off getting your license, no problem. Maybe you're a technician wanting to upgrade to general or extra. No problem. Try it right now. The first 50 questions are free. Your success is guaranteed. Try it out right now. www.hamtestonline.com. That's www.hamtestonline.com. You'll be really glad you did.
I think we lost Matt.
I think we did.
I may have.
I'll recheck the connection here real quick and see what's going on.
A strange thing, you know, with Area 51, just because my YouTube channel is on Area 51, there's a lot of people that view my channel and view it as a alien UFO channel, which is fine, you know, but it's really not. You know, it's about the base. And hopefully to catch a glimpse of the next generation fighter jet.
And it is, and you definitely do take a different tact to your videos. You know, and you know, that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about that is a lot of what like me and Matthew, what we've done is we picked out a spot and we just kind of hung out there and had some fun watching stuff and doing the time-lapse photography. And that's what this started out as. You know, we just wanted to go out there and do the time-lapse stuff because Matthew was really big into that. And he takes amazing photographs. And just out there in the middle of the desert, it is just so beautiful. I mean, I love it out there. But it is, you're definitely not going out there like a crazy alien hunter guy, you know. So
well, I am.
Well, you are. You may be, but, you know. But you don't. You don't. You know, take it that way. So you know that puts even, and it puts a different light on the whole scenario as well. You know, that was one of my follow up questions about the roads. Is, you know, I mean, there are so, I see you out there driving all the time. How do you find these things? And I see you go on certain roads, and you're talking about them being real sandy and being able to get stuck out there. But it's like, how do you just trial and error, or is there maps of these roads out there? How do you know where to go and not get lost out there?
Most of the roads are mapped, but a lot of the small trails that I'm on are not. I see a trail, and if it's leading towards Area 51, I'll take it for sure. I've taken every dirt trail towards Area 51, even on the west side, that I could possibly take. And I'm going to be doing a lot of videos from the west side coming up.
Now, have you ever encountered, I don't want to say landmines, but things that are in the road to deter you from going any further. You know, I mean, I've seen metal spikes and stuff like that. Have you ever encountered stuff like that might try to pop your tires while you're driving on the roads?
No, but a lot of those rocks out there, because everybody likes my channel, well, because what I'm putting out there, but they also enjoy my Jeep. I've I've got a really nice Jeep. I've spent a lot of money on it over the years. I bought it brand new, and I've upgraded everything on it. And they're always wondering why I don't have my Jeep out there. Well, one, I'm going to work or coming back to work. I have to haul things. Another reason why is the tires on that thing are so ding-dong expensive. And most of the roads out there at Area 51 is very sharp rock. I mean razor sharp. You could actually almost shave with it, you know. And you could still find Indian arrowheads out there, Native American arrowheads out there. But every time I go to Area 51 with my Jeep, I'll get home, and, I mean, I just put brand-new rubber all the way around on the Jeep, and there'll be chunks of tread missing where it's just been shaved off. So I'm just looking at one tire and going, well, that's $500 right there, you know, for two videos.
Right. Man, so, that really makes you wonder, you know, what kind of a tire deal they've got out there for the camo dudes, because those guys blaring by you, you know, buzzing you at 60 miles an hour, you know, they got to be tearing up their tires as well.
Their tires are amazing, and I actually had some time before I went on the air with you guys, and I was reviewing some of the footage that I had taken last week. And I showed this one spot where a camo dude went by, and I was showing his tire tread, which I've actually shown before. Their tire tread is completely different than what I've ever seen on the market. I mean, their tires are really wide, which obviously you can get, but the tread on them is completely straight, and it's very, very deep. I mean, their tread almost looks like it's grousers from a dozer going by, a bulldozer.
Huh.
Yeah, so they definitely have, well, it's Area 51, you know, and the best.
Are you back, Matt?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I had called on you, and you weren't present. I guess he went to grab some liquid refreshment, you know? He's probably getting all stressed out from putting these pictures up on the web.
Yeah.
We were talking about the camo dudes, and we were talking about, you know, security guards that are out there that work for a private company. They're not government employees, so to speak. We were talking about weapons and firearms, having quite a little bit of a discussion about the camo dudes pulling guns on the motorcycle riders. Now they... Christian was telling us about one fellow out there that he went way past the line and inside the base, and you know they all but pleaded with him to get down on the ground because he had something in his hand and nobody knew what it was, and they shot him dead. So anyhow, we were talking about that, and you had some thoughts about, because you're up on all this concealed carry stuff. What's your take on all this?
If you're not behind the line, or if I'm not behind the line, security company or not, if somebody comes up to me and pulls a gun, and I am on public property, that's considered assault. And if somebody does that to me, you better dang well believe that I am going to pull my gun if they have a gun on me, and I am going to pull the trigger. If you pull a gun on somebody and you're a private security company and you're on public land, you have zero jurisdiction to do that. Now, if you are behind the line and they tell you, you know, we're here to enforce this and so on and so forth, da 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 da, that's different. But if you're not behind the line and they pull a gun on you, you're well within your right as a U.S. citizen to protect yourself and body. That's there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. That's in the Castle Doctrine. I mean, if you feel imminent threat or danger, you're well within your right in a public area to defend yourself. And if there is a gun whether if it's rubber, whether if it's plastic, whether if it's, if you think it's a gun in that moment, by law, you can defend yourself. My question would be, has there been cases out there like that that we just don't know about?
Exactly, because you have no rights once you're even near the border. I mean, you just have no rights. I mean, say you were in the same situation as that father and son at the mountain gate. Two camo dudes came up to you, guns out, blazing. I mean, they literally had that those guns at their back. And you were to turn around and say you took both of, or one of them out, whatever. You would call Lincoln County Sheriff, and he's going to come up there. And, of course, it's going to be swarmed by then by camo dudes. And I'm sure there's going to be helicopters from Area 51 over you. And I'm sure they're going to drag your vehicle or you over the line and say you crossed the line. And they're going to put you in jail.
Well, you mentioned, too, at one point, I remember you saying something to the effect that they just take and drop you in a mine shaft somewhere, you know.
There's mine shafts out there everywhere. That's what Nevada is known for, you know. We're the silver state, even though there's so much gold out here, but there's mine shafts out here, and of course those camo dudes know where they're at. I mean, they could easily, especially at that mountain gate, and then there's obviously a few more gates too, where, yeah, they could shoot you, nobody would hear it, nobody would, you know about it, and they could just dump you in a mine shaft, sort of say, and your family would never know.
Well, see, I wondered about that as well, but what I can't figure out, too, is, I mean, you're all over that place, Christian. I mean, there isn't anywhere you haven't been, you know, and they pass you routinely. They've got to know who you are. I mean, they've got to have seen you so many times, and they've probably watched your videos, you know? So,
sure.
You know,
yeah,
so
one thing, yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, one thing I try to tell people in my videos or in the comments, because I always get a bunch of people in the comments saying, you know, the camo dudes are bad people, blah, blah, blah. The camo dudes aren't bad people. At least from all the years that I've been going there, they've never done anything bad to me. And they're just normal guys. And all of them do live in Alamo. None of them are flown from Vegas, like some of these documentaries say. All of them live right there in Alamo. And, you know, they've got consciences too. I mean, they don't want to shoot another American. They really don't. You know, last week when I was climbing up Sniper Hill, which will be one of my big videos coming out, I crossed the line, and I crossed the line big time, across the border. I didn't even realize I did it, but I was climbing a sheer cliff trying to get to this sensor that I had seen last year with a friend. And I couldn't exactly get to it. I did film it, but I was way up there. And I looked down, and I am way across the border. And I start freaking out because I obviously can't start running, because I would just start rolling down this cliff. So I just got out of there as quick as I could. And as I was driving down, I kept mentioning, Where are the camo dudes? You know, I'm starting to feel offended here. You know, the camo dudes are getting so used to me, they're not even sending anybody anymore. And sure enough, as soon as I said that, there's a camo dude perched right on the perch, right there. So
they watched you do this whole thing, including cross over the line, and they just sat there watching you. They didn't do anything.
I'm not positive that they actually saw me. You'll see the video here in another couple weeks, and everybody else will. I hope that everybody will tune in and watch it, because I did drive down the mountain road quite a ways, and then the camo dude was up there. That's why I think they do have some kind of sensor. Well, actually, I know they have a sensor up there in the rocks where the father and son call Sniper Hill, and I proved that there's no sniper up there, which I've always known, or I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. But they're more than likely in their truck remotely watching me at that moment. And obviously, I'm sure they had to have known that I crossed the line because I didn't do it by a few feet. It was by quite a few feet that I went on the other side of the border. And I was there for quite a while. And they didn't do anything, no.
Well, let's talk a moment about the safety side of this. How do you know where the border is? I mean, I know that there's people out there that have no idea where the border is at, and they're just going to go out there and, you know, start poking around. How do you know where it's
at? Question. You can get a good GPS. You can get a Garmin, which I have, and you could download the border onto your GPS, which still isn't going to give you a perfect border. So what Area 51 does is they put up stakes, steel stakes that are white at the bottom, and then the last 6 inches are red. And they have them, I would say, like every 50 yards, they'll have one of these stakes. But most of them have blown over, broken off, and are in different spots or just not there, period. So you really have to watch for these stakes or just don't even take a chance. If you think you're close to that border, just stop and turn around. It's not worth it. It's going to ruin your day and probably your life for a little while.
And not to mention, cost you a pretty penny with the police as well.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's probably going to put you on a list you don't want to be on, you know?
Well, see, here's what I don't understand. This is a highly secured government installation. And the border, in your videos, the border, for the most part, a lot of times, is pretty well near non-existent, or if it is, it's marked by sticks. You know what I mean? It's preposterous to think that a highly secured... We're talking about putting a wall up, you know, for Mexico. And here we have right. Area 51, one of the highest secured areas. And then in a lot of cases, the borderline's not even marked at all, you know. So my question
at
is,
all. Yeah.
Why don't we send those guys out to the Mexico line and let them enforce the line with camo dudes and whatnot, and their little bit of wire border, rather than building this multi-billion-dollar wall. I mean, I don't know. That
it's
just
such a great point, Ted. I mean, really, I've said this before to myself. I mean, if President Trump is so bent on building this wall for all this money and shutting down government until he gets his way, which he did, you know, I mean, my goodness, you know, the test site is protecting 2,000 square miles without a border, without a fence, anything.
Without a wall.
It just looks like open desert. Yeah. And they're able to do it with 100% accuracy, pretty much, especially on the Area 51 side, the east side. That is 100% accuracy. Why doesn't President Trump or whoever get with the people at Area 51 and just, you know, go, hey, I know you're not going to let me tour the base, but could you please tell me how you're able to secure that much land so I can implement it between the U.S.-Mexico border?
That would make perfect sense. And the other thing I wonder about, with the government shutdown, how has that affected Area 51? I mean,
not one bit.
And I wondered about that. I thought, well, are the camo dudes still in operation with
right.
the government?
Yeah,
with the government shutdown.
Yeah, not one bit. Not even the Air Force shut down during that time.
Well, I kind of wondered about that, but I thought about the Area 51, you know, the security there, and why could they not implement that at the U.S.-Mexico border? I mean, whatever they're doing, the sensors and all the different little things and, you know, camo dudes and the whole nine yards. It just seems like that would be the easiest way to do this, and probably, I don't know that it would be any less expensive, basically, you know, when you get it done with everything, but who knows? I mean, it just seems strange that they have this military base, and you're right. It's 100% effective what they're doing.
100%.
And I don't know. Haven't heard anything out of Matt. What's you got any thoughts in that direction?
No, I think they could take some lessons and learn a few things. But, you know, the thing is you know, I'm looking at it from many different perspectives here. I mean, if the camo dudes, I mean, I know you say they're nice guys and everything, but, I mean, if they're out harassing people that are beyond the border or on the other side of the border, that's an issue that would be interesting to talk about, I guess would be the way to say it. But if they're if they're just doing what we could consider their job, which, you know, that's, you know, the only thing you could ask these kind of individuals to do is do their job. You know, the thing is, there is so much going on out there. There's so much electricity that is sent out there. I mean, the amount of power, like if you look at the power grid and you see what the amount of power that's going out there, it would blow your mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have checked it. Yep.
I mean, what are they doing out there that requires that much? I mean, this is like the amount of power that you would see going to Los Angeles, New York, or Chicago.
Exactly.
This isn't a small amount of power. I mean, there's people who theorize that there is, you know, like Stargate was real and, you know, the whole TV show and the movie was a conspiracy to cover up the reality of it. You know, there's so many different things, but the amount of power that's going out to that facility, and you can see it when you drive in. I mean, it's not. And it's not just on the south going to the north as you're coming from Las Vegas. It's also from the north going to the south, and it's coming from the west, and it's coming from all three directions.
It's obvious they've got the world's largest disco out there.
I mean, there's a lot of power going on out there, and there's no telling what's going on. So the next question I got for you is, how accurate is Google Earth in that area? So, like, when you're looking at it from satellite images and you're looking down, how accurate is that?
Like, looking at the base itself or looking at the perimeter around?
Both.
The base, I'm sure they cloak that quite a bit. The perimeter, I would think it's pretty accurate.
Well, so, like,
definitely, you know, there's times where, you know, they'll shut it off, you know, when they're doing stuff, and, you know, I've heard from so many people that, you know, they have something with Google Earth where, you know, they know when to shut down Google Earth or whatever. They're, when they do take pictures, Area 51 knows when they do take pictures. You know, the first picture that came from Area 51 was a mistake, and they were very upset about that and got it taken down for a while, but now it's back up. So, sorry, somebody was asking something.
Well, I was asking.
So what about the area around, like, you know, miles around? You're saying that those are pretty accurate.
Yes. Yeah. I feel they are.
Well, I was going to ask a question, and I asked this earlier, but I don't think we addressed it. Do you think, after everything you've seen and all that's gone on, and you talk about your site is frequently viewed for UFO and alien sort of focus. What do you think? I mean, do you feel that there may be or there is an alien presence there at Area 51?
I would have to say I am definitely on the fence on that one. You know, the more I, you know, get into Area 51 and Area 6 and everything, of course, there's a huge part of me that does want to believe, you know, I mean, and especially now with these discoveries of these six times that I filmed this craft, you know, I mean, that's 100 years past anything we've got flying right now. I would think, you know, that's just my guess right there. But
and then the fact that those things look identical to the
what Lazar explained. I know.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. I've watched probably just about every documentary on Bob Lazar. I watched the brand new one that just came out. And, you know, it makes complete sense, you know. You know, there's a lot of things that point against Lazar, you know, but a lot of things that point towards him, you know, at the same time. So, you know, and I've got video that proves it. Everything he said, guys, is what I filmed.
Well, you know, it's interesting too because, you know, in talking to Pat, she talks about him coming out and spending time with him out there, and I guess at the 4th of July he'd come out and bring fireworks and stuff, you know, and you know the human side of him is very much represented by her if you talk to her at all about him, and she believes 100% everything that he's reported. Now we see these photographs that you have that are, I guess, excuse me, that are almost verification of what he was doing out there because it's this, the craft looks the same. And I'll tell you what's uncanny. If you go back and look at the photographs and the diagrams that George Adamski left, I mean, they all look like the same thing. I mean, it looks exactly like the same thing. These ball condensers on the bottom and, you know, the coils up at the top of the unit and the way the portholes are arranged and everything. I mean, it's just weird. I mean, it's like, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I think the thing with Adamski is he didn't write his own books. They were all co-authored, and I think the co-authors really embellished a lot, and it made it sound very, you know, not legitimate. You know, I mean, from my perspective, I think that's what it was. But if you look at it all as a whole, there's too many common denominators. You look at Lazar's scout ship that, what was it, Testers, I think it was. It came out with a model of that thing. It was a, you could build it. You know how you used to build model cars and stuff? Well, Testers is a company that built, you know, that would make model cars and ships and airplanes and things you could build. And they came out with that scout ship. And I don't know if it's around anywhere. I used to see it every once in a while on eBay. But you look at that scout ship and then you compare it to the photographs you've got now, those things that are, you know, flip-flopping across the sky. And, you know, they're dead ringers for what Lazar talked about. And, you know, he talked about, what was it? What do they call it? Is it, it's an area. Well, I don't know. What do they call that area?
S4.
Yeah, S4. They were all supposed to be there in a hangar, and then there's never other people that, excuse me, claim they actually saw these craft in a hangar there. So, I, you know, what do you do with all that? I don't know.
Right.
I guess I need to lie.
No, I mean, you know, Bob's story has a lot of validity to it, you know, and Miss Pat from Little Alien, she swears on her life that everything Bob Lazar said is true. And yeah, she is very good friends with him. And, you know, the more I do it, you know, the more I'm starting to believe, Bob, you know, I'm just not there 100% yet, you know.
Well, those photographs that you took, or that you didn't know you took, and I was talking, we were sitting down watching all this. David was in the den, and Holly was in there. We're all sitting in front of the television set watching, you know, Adventures with Christian, you know, which is, you know, it's really cool, you know. And if you haven't done that yet, pop some popcorn, folks, and sit down and watch all these videos. But I was thinking, you know what we need to do, or what you need to do, or somebody needs to do, we need to take all those videos you've taken, especially where you see sky, and go frame by frame, because there is no telling what are in all those videos. I mean, you've got so many of them up there, and you're right, they move so fast, it's like a flash in front of the eyeball. If you slow them down, they are still moving like a flash in front of the eyeball. It would be real interesting to take those videos and go frame by frame. I know it'd be meticulous, but go frame by frame and look and see what's there, because I would be willing to bet there's all kinds of things that occur in those videos that you haven't even noticed or no one else has. You know, you'd have to slow them down to see it. What do you think?
You know, and think of what I have actually edited out of these videos, you know, that isn't up there, you know, that's just sitting in the cloud somewhere that, you know, could be just as good as what I had when I was looking, overlooking the Tickaboo Valley, and this craft flew out of Area 51 and flew right, I mean, just perfect straight line across the Tickaboo Valley. I'm sure I had another one of those, or even better, that I just didn't see while I was editing it. These videos were up, I mean, 2 years, a year and a half before, you know, it took somebody, you know, to really shake me, you know, and send me screenshots of these things before I actually took notice. But I was getting all these comments saying, my gosh, what are you doing? You've got the best footage of a UFO I've ever seen, you know. And then, so I finally woke up, and I really wish I would have sent you the one video before we did this.
You can send it, because we're going to do another one of these shows. Matter of fact, I've kind of invited Christian to join me on a regular basis, you know, to get on and talk about what he's doing and what's happening out there, and providing they don't cart him off. the men in black.
Happen.
Yeah, the men in black coming after you, man. I mean, that's the only thing that that concerns me. But you know what? They've got to know. They've got to know out there, when they name that road the extraterrestrial highway, they've got to know there's people attracted to that place that come out there, just like you. I mean, there's numbers of them that come out there.
Oh, yeah. People flock out there, sure.
So how are they going to pick on? I guess they could if they wanted to, but it just seems to me that it's the old thing, you know, hey, you're asking for it, you know.
And I
really feel that way. I think if they don't want nobody out there, then why are they doing this? Why are they calling it the extraterrestrial highway? And then you've got a picture of the new sign that just went up on one of your videos. It was kind of interesting, because every time we go out there, everybody gets out and stands in front of the sign, and we take pictures, you know. I've got all kinds of group pictures of us standing in front of that sign, but then it's all peppered with... I don't know. What's all over the sign, Matt? You guys are up close to it. What's on that thing? You saw?
Well, there's all kinds of just different stickers and stuff. I mean, it's just...
Was it you that was lamenting that said, you know, if the new sign went up, you were lamenting the old sign?
I think both of us did, because, I mean, there's a lot of people who've gone out there that was part of the history of it.
Well, they need to put a blank sign below the big sign, and then everybody can put their stickers and stuff on that one, you know. Put a little sign that says, put stickers here.
Exactly. You see, those signs are changed out almost every year.
And you know what you can do? You can buy that brand-new ICOM 7300 from R&L Electronics. That's right, R&L Electronics. Or you can buy that brand-new ICOM 7610 from R&L Electronics, or a new D-Star radio. I've been talking about R&L Electronics for a good while, and you've heard me go on and on about Roger and the crew at R&L. When you call there, you get answers. They answer the phone. The people answering the phone are knowledgeable folks. They carry everything. They've got transceivers. They've got antennas. They've got microphones. They've got coax, linear amplifiers. They've got antenna tuners. I mean, they've got everything ham radio. They're outfitted for the radio amateur. What a place to go. You'll love dealing with them because they're great people. You'll get great service. Everything will be shipped out promptly. There's nothing worse dealing with somebody that doesn't take your order seriously and you don't know whether or not it's going to get there on time. Believe me, I've been there. I've been there ordering ham gear. That does not happen with R&L Electronics. Roger and his folks care about you and they care about the fraternity of ham radio. They want to keep you going. They want to keep it going. For the best price, the best possible price, and the best service and quality from individuals that know the amateur radio hobby and really care, remember the name R&L Electronics. Go up to the web, go to Google, and put in R&L Electronics. Contact them and go to their website, and you can't go wrong. From Bob Greenberg, W2CYK, comes something revolutionary. It's the R-Finder K1 DMR 4G LTE combination cell phone and DMR radio. That's right, all in one cell phone and a DMR radio, which will obviously operate analog as well, in one package. The cool thing about the DMR package is wherever you go, you turn the radio on and it just operates. You don't have to worry about a code plug anywhere you go in the world. And that's a fact. You should go up and check it out at rfinder.net. That's rfinder.net. This revolutionary combination cell phone and two-way radio with DMR. That's right. It's called the R-Finder K1 DMR 4G LTE cell phone. Go up and check it out at rfinder.net.
Well, you know what?
I've got video from a year ago that shows a brand new sign, and then I've got video from 2 years ago, too, that shows a brand new sign, and then my video from last week, another brand new sign.
Well, they should take the old signs.
Huh?
They should take the old signs and auction them off. Yeah. And give the money to Trump for his wall, I think, you know. Two or three signs, you could pay for the wall, you know.
So how many new mailboxes have you seen out there? I mean, is that something that's frequently run off with?
Yeah, ever since the original mailbox that was there that was actually sunk in concrete, I've seen two mailboxes since, and one was from the tour company that takes people here from Vegas, the Strip, and takes them out to Area 51. They put up a black mailbox, a cheap plastic one, and the top was stolen off of it. And at the moment right now, that half box is still there. And then somebody put up a wood box to try to replicate the old one right now, you know, which that's not going to stand a chance out there either. That's why I'm building a very heavy duty one that I guarantee if somebody tries to take off, their bumper's going to be laying on the ground.
Well, listen, this is an excellent opportunity. If you have a business and you'd like to take and get an ad space on this new mailbox. Now, this sounds crazy, but this is what Christian's doing. So, you know, we're going to be on there with WTWW. And what is it? Matt, tell what you're wanting up there, but we've got folks that want to get on the mailbox is what they want to do. So he's got ad space available. So shoot him an email and put the name of your establishment up there on the black mailbox. My goodness, can you just imagine? Now, to me, it's not as much an advertisement as it's just an image thing to think that you got your name on the black mailbox, you know, the famous black mailbox. And it's as famous as Area 51 is, I think. Wouldn't you say,
Chris? It is. Oh, absolutely. It's, I mean, when people think of Area 51, they think of the black mailbox because most people know that, you know, the main mailbox was the rancher, Steve Medlin, that has the ranch in front of Area 51 there. And he got sick of getting a bunch of letters, you know, addressed to Area 51 and addressed to the aliens. So he welded on a box below it and said to the aliens. And then that lasted for years. And then finally somebody was able to get it and steal it. I'm going to do my darndest. Well, I'm going to build this very heavy duty, and the names will be welded on there. So there'll be no way for somebody to, you know, take your name off. Even to apply a sticker over your name is going to be almost impossible. And then I'm going to be by there every week and a half. So I'll make sure
to pull the stickers off if somebody tries to sticker it.
Exactly. But still trying to put a sticker over a weld isn't going to stick. So there's not going to be much chance of that. I would think people would really, you know, I thought it was just such a great idea. I'm not making any money off this because it is costing me a lot of money to do this. You know, and I actually thought I had everything covered before I actually announced that I was doing this, meaning, you know, building the box, you know, getting it out there, setting it and everything. I never thought about how am I going to get at least 50 gallons of water out there so I can mix the darn cement. So yeah. I had to go and buy a 50-gallon barrel.
Oh, cow. Yeah, I mean, there is. There's a lot of logistics out there. I mean,
you're going to camp out while the concrete hardens, aren't you? I mean,
I'm going to stay there all night until that concrete cures all the way. Yep. And, of course, I'll be filming. Of course, I'm not going to film all 24 hours, but I'm going to film building the box, installing the box, putting the people's names on it. Everybody that's already went to my PayPal and got their name on there, I've already sent them confirmations, and I'll have a video showing me welding their name on there and then showing what the box looks like. And then it'll probably be my son and I that goes out there and digs this massive hole and puts the mailbox in.
There you go. That's cool. I mean, that is like beyond cool, I think, you know, so that the Area 51.
I really think it is too. I mean, you're bringing back, I'm making it identical to what it was before, just much heavy, you know, everything is going to be much more heavy duty to where hopefully, you know, and I'm sure it won't be stolen.
Well, the first time I mentioned it to Matt right away, what was it you said, Matt? You popped up and said something.
I said I like TW on there, and our broadcast company / web hosting company, Tuck Support, to be on there because it's just so iconic. I mean, that the ability to know that there's a piece of me out there, even if it's, you know, not like actually me, but a piece of what I have created in this world. It's, to me, that's just cool. Knowing that, yeah, I mean, my hat's off to you for doing that. I mean, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
Thank you very much. And actually, yeah, it very much is.
Well, you know, once again, we've talked about this, and I'm not trying to, boil the pot again, but. You know, when you think about it, the amount of time, how much time total have you spent driving Area 51 and filming every mile of it, and all the things you've done? I mean, it's like, how would you reflect back and say, well, this is the motivating factor, this is why I do this? I can't really tell you the truth. pin it down with us as to why do we go out there and do broadcasts? You know, why is it we're so fascinated with this place? But I'm asking you because you're like, Christian, you're up here. You're up to your neck in this into this, and I think it's cool. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Sure. Well, you know, there's YouTube channels out there that literally go to Disneyland every day or every other day, and I'm just amazed at how many views they get going to Disneyland. I'll go to Disneyland, I don't know, every 5 years, and I'm just dreading the next time I've got to go back, you know, but Area 51 to me is my Disneyland. You know, every time I go there, I wouldn't say every time, but I do discover something new, believe it or not, even though I know every nook and cranny there is out there, but I am still discovering things out there, you know, and, you know, it's known worldwide. I mean, I can check my analytics on YouTube and see where people are viewing my videos from. And it's from all around the world. And it's almost even, you know, of course, the United States is number one. But after that, it is pretty much even down the board.
Well, you know, I guess the other thing, too, is I think what it is, to me it is that mystery of that spark inside of you wondering, you know, have we been visited by E.T.? And is E.T. or part of E.T. or something from E.T. out there at Area 51? Is that one of the reasons why they guard the place so closely? I mean, Lazar was out there and said he was, you know, doing reverse engineering on alien craft. And so that just sticks in the back of my mind. You know, and I don't know. I mean, we're big followers of the Bible, and I keep, you know, I keep saying it's kind of interesting. Verses of Scripture that talk about angels and talk about, like, Enoch, who walked with God and was no more. You know, there's just things in there that, you know, makes you wonder, you know, how little we know about everything around us, and especially... You know, I've got two 10-inch telescopes, and I'm telling you, one of the biggest things, we were talking the other day about toy telescopes. They sell these Tascos and things like that, and they give them to kids, and then kids can't see anything through them because they're so doggone cheap. But, you know, you get a really good scope. Like, I don't know what the brand name of one's in a Celestron is all I know. It's a 10-inch reflector. And, yes, you can see all of Jupiter's moons. You can see the red spot. You can see Saturn's rings. You know, and then when you point it to the moon, it's almost frightening, you know, to see the surface of the moon. And I have seen things, I swear to heavens, I have looked through the telescope at the surface of the moon and seen objects crossing the face of the moon. And I'm like, what in the world is this?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get an answer from anyone. There are people that have the Generation 3 night vision goggles, and you can look up in the sky with those things, and you can see things that no one can tell you what they are. You know, things that look like they're shooting at each other, for goodness sakes. You know, I don't know what we're looking at when we see that stuff. No one's going to tell us. You know, it might be really interesting to go out there, out to Area 51 with a pair of those... night vision Generation 3 glasses or whatever, and watch the sky with those things. I just wonder.
Oh, that is something on my wish list way up there. Mm-hmm. Yes, because I've got a friend here in Las Vegas that also has a YouTube channel. It's I'm going to plug it, sorry. It's UFOs Over Vegas, and he just sits at his house, which is in Summerlin, which is in Vegas, and he's kind of on the hill. And he'll point his night vision towards Nellis and towards Area 51 and towards Creech Air Force Base. And he catches real, legit UFOs. It's incredible what he's catching with these things.
I have to get these guys, get him, round him up and get him on the air with us. You know,
I could easily do that. He's a very good friend of mine.
Well, when I was a kid, and I'll tell this story because I think it's something that probably needs to be told. I was a kid, and a friend of mine, Holly, just walked in here. Are we overtime? I don't much care if we are. Yeah. Doesn't matter. We're the boss. We can do what we want to do. Anyways, I was a kid, and I was outside. My friend that lived across from me, I was in Dearborn Heights, and he was in Taylor. We both have ham licenses, and we're flashing lights on clouds. This is kid insanity. We're doing Morse. We bought a ham license, but we're doing Morse code on low-level clouds. And we were having a lot of fun with this. You know, we really were. So I said, you know, maybe if we were to change, we had 12-volt, no, I'm sorry, yeah, 12-volt car headlights is what we had. Three or four of them aimed into a parabola, focused pretty good. So we got a little bit of light amplification there, and you could do it on clouds, but you couldn't ever just send a beam up and see it that far away. So I was talking to my buddy Ralph. I said, let's pull all these 12-volt bulbs out and put 6-volt automotive headlights in. You'll get a lot brighter. Of course, they'll burn out real quick. But we put those in, and we found out we could actually barely see a light beam, you know, coming from him. I could see his, he could see mine, and we were just flashing in the sky. So anyhow, in the middle of all that, something flashed back at us. Now, I don't know. I was, I don't know how old I was, maybe 12 years old, right at that age, 13, because I got my ham license when I was really young. So anyway, right away I was afraid. I got on my little VHF radio, and I said, Ralph, are you seeing this? And he says, yeah, what is it? I said, I have no idea, you know. So I got scared, and I went running into the house and locked the doors. I mean, that was it. I was, you know, like I was freaked out. There was nothing in the sky at that point. There was Echo. I don't know if Sputnik was up there yet, but Echo was it, the big aluminum inflated ball that went over, reflected light, and they were bouncing radio waves off of Echo. Well, anyhow, we stopped flashing the lights because it did. It scared me as a kid. I was just frightened, by it. So, anyhow, years later, David and Matt and I don't even know where we were. We were in some sports store, and we ran across a 10 million candle power spotlight. And they were like, ooh, Dally, you gotta have one of these, man. This is what you need. So I think we bought two of them. Did we buy two? We bought two of those things, didn't we?
Yeah, we got two. Yeah, there was two.
All right. So anyways, we go outside and start flashing the lights. Well, I'm telling you, it wasn't hardly any time at all. We started getting flashes back. Now, you know, this is a different time and age. So there's now stationary satellites. There's silent helicopters. There's things now that exist that didn't exist back then. So you don't really know what it is that's flashing at you. But I would say within 40 minutes of this flashing of the lights, we got visited by three or four Air Force jets that were flying, treetop level. And, the ground shook when they went over. So I said, hey, guys, let's knock this off and come in the house. Of course, these two, they're like, oh, no, this is cool. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool, all right. I don't know what, we don't even know what we're doing. So anyways, about 3 weeks later, what was really weird is the Nashville Tennessean published a story that a UFO had been spotted in, what was it, Brentwood or someplace south of us? Where was it?
White House. I think.
No, that was the next night.
Oh, that was the next night. Okay, yeah.
This was like Brentwood or something. Well, that's so far away, there's no way anyone at that distance could have seen our light beams. No way. It wouldn't work, you know. So we had a friend of ours who was a doctor. He had come over the first night. Well, he came back 2 weeks later. Come on, let's get the lights. And I'm thinking, no, let's don't, you know. So they go outside. They flash the lights. No Air Force jets at night. But we did have lights flashing back. And so I related this story to Linda Howe. I told her about it. And so Linda would come over here during... William Henry would have a conference here in town, and she'd come in and she'd stay here with us and stay outside and get on the lounges. I had to put the picture up of all of us out there and flashlights in the sky. Well, then on, what was it, November the 12th, right after 9/11, she calls and she says, listen, all the airplanes are grounded. You need to go outside and flash lights in the sky and see what happens because everything's on the ground. I thought, well, so we did. Now, Matt, you came up with an infrared... I'm sorry, I've got something in my throat. You came up with an infrared camera of some kind. I don't know what it was. Do you recall what that was that you had? Okay, now where did he go?
I don't know.
He keeps wandering off. Kind of makes it wonder what he's got in the jug in the next room. anyways, he got an infrared camera. And we shot pictures. Now, with the naked eye, we only saw one light flashing. But on the infrared, there were several lights flashing. And so we sent the, gave the video to Linda Howe. And at that point, she took and sent it to a fellow by the name of Bruce McAbee, which I didn't know anything at all much about. I didn't even know who he was, to tell you the truth. And anyways... he looked at it, and I can't remember what it was he determined, but it was like that the thing was a legitimate, a legitimate video. And, you know, of course, he now estimated the size of the objects and the distance of the objects. Now, how he could do that, I have no idea. He's kind of a scientific guy.
Right.
And
wow.
So anyways, that was that story. So I'm kind of wondering what would happen if someone were to, you know...
I've got a story exactly like yours.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. This was last summer. I was driving towards Rachel from the North End, so I was coming from the Tonopah area. And if you don't know, and the listeners don't know, Tonopah, Nevada is voted year after year after year as the number one stargazing town in the United States because it's so dark out there. So it's even darker near Rachel. But I'm driving down the 375 towards Rachel, coming from the north. So I was going south. Dead of night, it was about 1:30 in the morning, and I always carry a very high powered flashlight with me. And I was driving down the road. Of course, there's nobody else on the road except for me. I started flashing the flashlight, almost like you said, Morse code, out the window, just facing horizontal towards the desert. And then all of a sudden, I got flashes back. So I kept doing this and kept getting flashes back. I didn't lose you guys, did I?
No.
We're here.
Oh, I was hearing beeping for some reason. Okay, but so I just thought I'm just going to stop, and I just stopped in the middle of ET Highway, and I got on top of my Jeep and started flashing. Well, at this time, I actually had about 7 lights. I would say, I don't know, about 2 miles wide. That would flash back as soon as I flashed. So I started recording, and I started recording this, and I probably recorded it for a half hour. I never uploaded it because I don't know if you guys know, but YouTube can get pretty mean in the comment section. So I was just kind of worried about what kind of comments I would get back and everything, but it was... It was actually very scary at that point and everything. You know, how I would instantly hit that flashlight and 6 to 7 lights would instantly flash back. if I hit it three times, they would do it three times.
It's definitely, again, I mean, it's a sobering effect. You know, you when you start to see this stuff with your own eyes, you know, it's one thing to hear about it on the radio, but man, when you see it, it is like, it's wild. You know, it's just seeing things splash back at you, and you're like, what on earth is that? You know, you're just
right. You're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. You know, and you're looking up into the sky, and it's, you're flashing your light up there, and it's like, who is up there flashing back at me? You know, it's like, what is going on?
Well, you said a long time ago that you feel that these guys like to impress. Do you think that's part of what's going on here?
Could be, you know, could be. But what was strange about this this time, due to I was driving, you know, towards Rachel from the north, I was actually shining my light to the east. So it was away from Area 51.
Well, see, this is a phenomena that you can get anywhere. I mean, we've done it here in Tennessee. It's happened right there in Las Vegas as well. I mean, this isn't something.
Well, weren't we flashing high powered flashlights in the sky when we were out at Area 51?
Yes.
And were we not getting some flashes back from something?
We did.
Yeah,
we definitely did.
Do you recall that, Matt?
Yes, I do. I remember seeing we would flash it, and then it would flash. Those were more brilliant than the ones that we've seen before. Those were like
spotlights almost. It was.
Yeah, they were pretty bright.
What I was asking, and while you were gone, and that is, what kind of an infrared camera were we using the night outside after 9/11 when Linda Howe called us and said, take your, you know, go out there?
That was one of the Sony IR cameras that had the ability to see through the clothes. That was the same models, the most high-powered infrared camera that we could get our hands on at the time.
Yeah, and like I said, you could see in the video, you could see four or five lights flashing, you know, back at us. It was like a whole group of them, you know.
Yeah, things that we didn't see with our own eyes. I mean,
you know, and Bruce McAbee is the guy that analyzed it all, and I you know, Linda Howe used to have all that up on her Earth Files website. And I've got pictures of her on a chase lounge laid out here with a big light flashing in the sky with us, you know. But, you know, that is right. That is a phenomena that can be done anywhere in the U.S. If you're brave enough to do it, I guarantee you, if you try one or two, maybe three nights, you're going to get something that will flash back at you. Now, I don't know. I can't remember, but wasn't it Stephen Greer who would lead people out into the desert somewhere? They would flash lights,
yep.
And you know, I don't know. I heard stories about that. Do you know about that?
Yes, absolutely, I do. Yeah, yep. He would do that, and yeah, he would get the flashes right back at him. Yeah, he would lead a bunch of people out into the desert and do that. Usually, too. Where people would always congregate would be the black mailbox.
Hmm. I did not know that.
That's where Stephen Greer brought everybody.
Well, you know, it's, and again, too, you know, it's like, what is it that's flashing back and why would it? You know, why would it flash back unless it was wanting to establish some sort of communication? And
right.
Saying hello? Is that what they're doing? I don't know. Anyway, I've said a long time ago, if there is an alien presence here, they can't be dangerous, because if they are from wherever they're from and they've traveled that far, that distance, excuse me, I'm sure they can have us in a matter of seconds, you know?
They can
take care of us. I'm grabbing a cough drop because I feel like I'm going to cough my head off here. You know, so I mean, now, you know, what is it like? I mean, you're out there in the middle of the night, and for the most part, you're by yourself, you know, and you're camping out at some location there. Do you ever get scared?
Actually, no. And, you know, I mean, I get comments all the time, you know, asking the same question and everything. Am I scared about getting abducted and all this or just anything? You know, and I've purposely camped out at, I don't know, for sake of a better word, the scariest spots at Area 51. Last November, I stayed up at the Mountain Gate where Sniper Hill is. And you have to drive in a canyon quite far to get to that border. So I drove up there and I parked and I slept the night. You know, I don't know if I kind of feel that, you know, of course the camo dudes know you're there. And I do feel the camo dudes know who I am. I just kind of feel, and in October, it was strange because they were having a really strange heat wave for October or November, the last time I went out there. So it was warm. So I slept the entire night with both my windows down. So if I was scared of some kind of ET coming and getting me, that would have been their perfect chance right there. Maybe. You know, but, you know, I like when I sleep on Grumine Road and I always pick across from Campfire Hill. I don't know. I feel safer because I know the camo dudes are watching, you know.
Yeah, if anybody was to come and get you, camo dudes, they'll know it too.
So yeah. What do you do if you get a flat tire out there?
Well, you're definitely going to change it yourself. That's, you know, that's something that I've asked a lot of my viewers. I don't like to call them viewers or fans. I call them friends. But, you know, I mean, say I was driving out there and, you know, there's been a couple times where that sand has grabbed my tires, you know, and veered me off the road. Say I rolled over or I got stuck. Would a camo dude come and help me? For me, I would say if I was stuck, a camo dude wouldn't come and help me. But if I was to roll over like the Jeep or something like that, I would say 100% a camo dude would break his, sort of say, cover, and he would come and help me.
Well, it's bound to have happened to other people that's been out there. It's bound to have happened to them where they've had something, I guess I want to say, catastrophic happen, and they're stuck out there in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, I've had 6 flat tires so far.
That you always keep a spare on you, and, you know,
carry 2 spares with me.
2 of them,
and
okay.
Then, yeah, and a plug kit and a compressor. I carry a lot with me every time.
So you're prepared.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I have a big slew of notes that I have that I go down. I make a checklist, you know, and I check it twice, almost like Santa Claus, and then I take off in my sleigh.
So go ahead. One of the, you know, again, for any newbies that are going out there, I think it needs to be a warning to everyone. If you're driving at night, you better watch out for them cows, right? Because they'll
oh my goodness,
pop right up.
Yeah.
This is, you know, and people aren't used to free-range cattle. These things just walk wherever they want to.
Yes.
Now, you know, no, that does bring up a question. You think a camo dude would just, you know, tell a cow to go the other way if he started going towards the coming towards a line?
No, well, you know, the ranchers are actually allowed to go into Area 51 and gather their cattle up.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's why I get comment after comment after comment. They've started slowing down because, you know, it's gotten so old. Why don't you just get a cow suit and walk into Area 51, you know? Or why don't you strap a GoPro onto a cow and let it wander into Area 51, you know? Well, with that one, how am I going to get a cow to wander into Area 51? I'm going to lose my GoPro, you know, and then I'm going to have, PETA all over me for strapping a GoPro to a cow, you know, so, yeah, but those
that's utterly
are
ridiculous.
Allowed to go into Area 51. I don't know how far, but they are.
I don't think he heard you, Matt.
I said that's utterly ridiculous.
It is utterly ridiculous, yes, but I get it every video. Every single video.
Well, either that, or you have to become identified as a rancher. You know, you have to apply for a job out there on one of those ranches, and then, of course, then you hopefully the cows will stray in the right direction. And but you know, even if you got inside the line, I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, you'd have to go very deep in there. To where you're actually, you know, at the base and then be able to see anything. I'm sure that inside the base, all those buildings are very well guarded. And I think it's pretty hopeless from the standpoint that somebody's going to sneak in there and see something, you know.
Right.
But I think a lot of what's going on is visible, obviously, in the skies and from the outside. So, you know. It was funny, there was one of the videos I saw up there that somebody had had an alien walking across the dirt road.
I saw that. Yeah.
I don't know. It was obviously a spoof, but it was funny to see. It was really funny to watch. Well, what's the... Yeah. I mean, let's say this. Okay, you're out there, and all the traveling you've done, which is miles, and literally traveled hundreds of miles out there, and spent the night... What's the scariest thing that's ever happened to you out there? Where you were actually, you know, frightened and thought, you know what, I may not come back out here. Well, I'm sure you've lived through that at least once.
Ted, as dramatic as I want it to sound and everything, it's probably got to be the story that I already told you about. Yeah, it was two orbs, but I would call them more like almost like fireballs that I was across from Campfire Hill, like I keep saying, and these things were coming straight towards me. You know, there was nothing I could do. I actually started the Jeep up and I don't know what I was going to do, but I just sat there filming these darn things and then they just disappeared into the ground. But I really thought Area 51 had enough of me, and that was my end right there. But actually, there was one other time where I was up at the mine. It was during red flag, and I wasn't filming. And the mine is kind of set in a gully on top of a mountain. So I'm walking along, and I was walking to a certain spot so I'd get some B-roll or something like that. And all of a sudden, this Apache helicopter just flies out of nowhere. And I could feel the wind off the rotors. But for some stupid reason, I don't know why, I started running. And I tripped, and I don't know if the guys must have felt bad, but they took off awfully fast after that, you know, because I had bloodied knees and elbows and everything. My camera went flying, you know. So that was another scary time.
They spooked you is what they did.
They spooked me. Oh, yeah. They definitely spooked me there. It's because I was completely caught off guard. And that's actually really, I think, the first time that I've spoken of that. I was at Area 6 with a friend.
Folks, I want to talk to you for just a minute about the Maine Trading Company. The proprietor, Richard Lenore, a ham radio guy through and through. His whole life is ham radio. He's the guy that started the Ham Fest in Paris, Texas. And now, of course, he's the proprietor of... If you go up to the website, you're going to see amateur radio. You're going to see new open box demos. You're going to see connectors and adapters. And you're going to see educational toys and FRS, GMRS. You're going to see radio accessories you're going to see, package deals. I mean, it's all up here. It's too numerous to mention. He's got radios. Of course, he carries Elenco, Kenwood, ICOM, Yaesu, MFJ. He's got all of Martin Juice products over there at the MFJ. You can order anything you want to. The best prices. There's just no way you can beat them. The main trading company, especially if you're west of the Mississippi near Paris, Texas, you need to buy from Richard Lenore, KA5DX, the main trading company. And it says here, free U.S. shipping on most orders over $100. You know, go up to their website, the main trading company. Go up there and just Google them. If you can't find the website, Google them. Once again, they're in Paris, Texas. But they've got everything you could possibly want. And just to name a few things, they've got wires and cables and antennas and amplifiers and antenna tuners and radios and handhelds and VHF, UHF, the whole deal. And if you're confused and you've got questions, pick up the phone and call and talk to Richard Lenore. You can't go wrong. These are people that you'll love to deal with. You'll make friends for life. The main trading company in Paris, Texas. That's where you need to go. Let me tell you a little bit about the ICOM IC7610. This is a high-performance RMDR receiver, transceiver. This thing will pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. And the 7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio, and it's going to change the world's definition. That's the ICOM 7610. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/amateur. That's ICOMAmerica.com/amateur. We've got some news for you folks that live in antenna-restricted areas. You know what I'm talking about. And if it's not an HOA, it's a bunch of nosy neighbors. Well, listen, we've got some news for you. It's a new antenna. It's called the Cobweb. That's right, the Cobweb. And this thing is made by MFJ. It's incredible because it's 10 through 20 meters in all the bands in between. And it goes up real easy, and guess what? It disappears. It's got a very low takeoff angle. It's an excellent antenna. You have all kinds of fun with this thing. It's called the Cobweb. Go to the MFJ website. Just Google MFJ and Google MFJ Cobweb. Go up and take a look at this. You won't believe what you see, and you know once you see it, you're going to have one. It's the Cobweb from MFJ.
Excuse me. This was spooky, very spooky. We were checking out Area 6, which I have got to get, you know, good footage of, because they are going to annex the area that we were at, and you're never going to be able to get close to Area 6 again. But we were there checking out the base, and all of a sudden we just started hearing click, 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 click. We're like looking at each other going, what in the world is that? And we turn around and we start following the noise, and we followed it back. It was the electric locks in my Jeep going up and down. And then all of a sudden it just locked. Luckily I had my keys in my pocket. You know, and I mean, it just wasn't me there. So that was a very scary deal. And then the second time we went back to Area 6 again. This is the newest area to pop up out there. And we were up on the mountain, you know, spying down on the base. And they know you're there before you get there. So we start smelling smoke, and it's a very distinct acid smell. And I had just bought, well, it was a month old or so, a gel battery for my Jeep, which most people know is a very expensive battery. Went back down to the Jeep, and the battery was completely fried. It was smoking. Luckily, it was a clutch, and We were able to push start it and get out of there.
That's amazing.
So,
I wonder, Matt, what do you think about that? What do you think? I mean, how much power would it take to burn a battery up like that?
Well, we've seen instances before out there in Hartsville where they were burning stuff up with, you know, a ton of different, electromagnetic pulses. So, I mean, that doesn't surprise me. Hearing the door things go up and down doesn't surprise me either, because to me it would be like one of those things where they just want to harass you and get you to stop what you're doing.
What do you think is Area 6? Tell us a little bit about that, because that's a brand new deal for us.
Area 6 is at the most southern end of the Nevada test range, so it's the closest to Las Vegas. You can take a road from the west side of Area 51 and the test range, and you could take it all the way around the southern portion of the Nevada test site. So once you get to about the very southern tip of it and about the middle of the test site, if that's making any sense, which would be between the 95 freeway and the 93 freeway. You guys took the 93 to get to Area 51. On the west side is 95, and they both run parallel. And so Area 6 popped up on the map around 2015, and it's just a single runway. And, of course, the government won't say what it's for, but most speculate it's for the newest drones we have, that they don't want to fly over at Creech, because Creech is right off the 95 where you could sit there and watch the drones fly all day long. So Area 6 is where they do all the hidden, you know, brand-new drones.
Well, you know,
I wouldn't be surprised if one of those things that I caught on camera isn't flying around Area 6.
You were talking about drones in a couple of the videos, but these didn't look to me like normal drones. I mean, these look like, I mean, they were doing kind of the if I remember correctly, they were doing, you know, the gyrations of, you know, straight up and down and right angle turns and that sort of thing. It seems like I remember that, and you were talking about them. I remember seeing, you know, like something that you had caught on video, and no, they didn't look like a normal drone, you know, that you would see that would move around because it's on, you know, props or up there spinning around. This thing looked like it was a different type of technology.
That was probably on the video where I showed all the jets taking off and landing very low. There's a drone in there where I just, there was actually three drones flying, and I tried getting to my camera as quick as I could, and by the time I got to the camera and started filming, there was only one drone in the air at that time. But it wasn't flying like a normal drone. You know, it wasn't doing like a square or anything. It was still kind of flying and everything. So I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
Maybe. I don't recall. I just remember watching it and sometimes I'm falling asleep because I've been up so many hours and we've got the video on. So maybe I probably dream, you know. But I don't know. Have you ever seen anything out there, though? And I will ask this. This is, because now we're taking some, I'm fielding some questions here from listeners that are writing in. And our email address is simple. It's email, the word email, at WTWW.us if you've got a question of sorts. But the question came in, have you ever seen anything out there at all that you thought was an alien? Or have you ever seen anything that looks like, you know, a creature that don't necessarily belong here?
I've got a video out there that says what did I title that darn thing? It says Area 51, I believe Mountain Gate, Mannequin Camo Dude. All right, so I believe I was up at the Mountain Gate or one of the gates near the north end of Area 51. The camo dudes passed right next to me. I got a perfect shot right into the cab. And the passenger and the driver do not look human whatsoever, especially that passenger. That's why I said mannequin, and then question mark. You guys need to check that video out.
Okay, it's how is it labeled again?
Something with mannequin. So, you know, Area 51 mannequin camo dude, something like that.
That would be, you know, that, no, that's just, that's kind of food for thought that they could use, you know. You know, E.T. would be driving a Dodge, whatever the heck it is they drive out there, or that Raptor, for that matter.
Yeah.
It was just like Matthew.
Strange,
go ahead. That.
Well, what's strange, you know, I mean, where Creech Air Force Base is, just north of there is a very large mountain, and that's where a man named Charles Hall, which was very high in the military, he's got his master's degree. He's very, very, very smart man. But he has a couple books out there about that's where the tall whites live. And that's a form of an alien. But it's the actual mountain just north of Creech Air Force Base right there. But Creech allows them to live right there. And there's a few officers that these tall whites will only allow in to their area, and Charles Hall was one of them, you know, and he explains how they're different than us, but they actually look like us, but they're taller, slimmer. They really don't walk the way we walk. They kind of like shuffle a little bit more, but you know, he talks about them going to the Golden Gate in downtown, the casino. So, very interesting stuff, you know.
So, is this a book that's out that he wrote or what?
Yes, yes. And my friend that I'll bring on the show that I told you had the other YouTube channel, he is an expert on this. So.
Well, I've never heard of this gentleman, and I've been that. Do you know what the name of the book is that he wrote?
It'll be more than likely Charles Hall and the Tall Whites.
Well, we'll have to look that up. It really will.
It's very, very interesting.
So this guy, once again, his background was you know, I mean, I was listening, but there's a whole lot here to absorb.
Sure.
His official position was he was what in the military, and then what did he do? Did he retire or how did that work?
He was just really high up in the military. I'm not the perfect person to ask about this. You know, my friend knows everything about the guy, but you know he retired military. But he was one that Nellis would send up there. And something that tall whites really enjoyed, especially sort of say the female tall whites. I'm starting to sound wacko right now. I don't even know why I brought it up. Goodness gracious. Oh. They loved the Sears catalog. Remember the old Sears catalog?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they loved it. So Charles would always bring them the new Sears catalog, you know, and the women were, you know, just fascinated with it. And so, and what's strange is Creech always has helicopters, but it's a military base. Again, this is something I am so skeptical on here, you know, all of it. But I have observed so many times that there is constantly helicopters going up to the top of that mountain, landing, and then coming back down, going back, and just continuing.
Wow. Well, Matt, David, you got any comments about this stuff?
Well, I was looking on.
What's that, Matt?
I was looking on Google Maps, and it just amazes me how many craters in between Area 6 and Area 51 there is. I mean, it looks like they have just knocked the living hell out of the ground.
The most bombed place on the Earth. I believe it was 988 nuclear bombs they tested out there.
Wow. Yeah. We got an email in here from a guy, and I've got to read this. I really have to read this. It's from a guy by the name of Sydney, and I won't give his last name. He said, this individual, he said, Christian gives your last name, a.k.a. Adventures with Christian. This individual is bragging about either having a show or being a guest on your shortwave station, and he's showing a link on Facebook. Well, no, he's not bragging about it at all. He's on the air right now, matter of fact. So if you're listening, maybe you can glean a little bit from that. He said, your station seems to cater to Christians. He said, this guy isn't one. And I'm like, well, how do you know he isn't one? How do you, I mean, you know, I don't know. We get nutcases that write in from time to time.
I've got nutcases that follow my channel. I've got a real bad one that lives in Canada. So
I thought it was kind of funny. He's already Christianed you, you know, an atheist or something, possibly worse. I don't know, you know, but you know, and you know, you gotta understand something. I would consider myself to be a rather conservative Christian, but that doesn't mean that I have to roll my brain up and turn it off. You know, we're talking about stuff here that nobody understands totally. We don't.
Right.
And it's on the edge, you know, but you know, we can even look into our Christian Bible of stories inside the Bible that just blow the mind when you read them and you read the description of what they're saying. You know, and it makes you wonder, because these are people writing stuff that were, you know, years ago that had no way of, they'd never seen a jet airplane, they'd never seen anything, you know, and they're right. And the descriptions are quite colorful. We don't know. There's many things that we don't know and understand. It's even like, for example, in the book of Genesis, where it talks about, if you know a little bit about Hebrew, Elohim created the heavens and the earth, and the word Elohim is plural. So what does that mean? Of course, the conservative Christians will say, well, that was the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Don't sound like it to me. Sounds like Elohim was plural. And I propose, at this point, we don't know. We don't understand. We don't, you know, this is something over our heads. But it's still fun to talk about. It's intriguing. And I think anytime you explore areas that you don't know anything about, and you keep an open mind, you're bound to learn something. And exactly. And that's how I see it. That's how I look at it. So this guy here is, you know, you need to get a can opener and open your head a little bit here, you know. So anyhow.
Yeah.
Any comments, Matthew? Do you think we've all become heathen because we're
Yes.
I don't know, man. You know. Well, there is that element out there. There really is. And I just don't. I don't cater to them. Because I don't claim to have all the answers, and I don't claim to know everything. And,
exactly. You know, right.
And a fellow like Christian here, his curiosity is just, you know, just, it's run away. You know, there's more curiosity in this man than there is a cat. And just as brave as one, too, you know. And I mean, hey, we've been out there. You know, we've been out there poking around and looking and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's the natural nature of a human being, is to be curious and to wonder. Wonder is probably a word that probably describes it the most. Wonder in terms of the curious side of wonder, and then the awe of the wonder that you feel when you experience some of these things, or you learn to know some of these things. Now, somebody jump in here after me and make some sense of this, because.
So the one thing that I find interesting, and we were talking about power before, if you're going in towards off of Mercury Road or Mercury Highway, the signs that are posted there on Mercury Highway read as follows. Let me get to the point where I can read them again. They read as follows. You are now entering the Nevada National Security Site, no trespassing, by the order of the United States Department of Energy.
DOE, yep. And that's what that man blew through right there.
And that gate, there is no actual gate there. It's just a line drawn on the road.
Right. Yep. Anybody getting off that freeway, I'm sure, you know, I'm sure many people have passed that, call it a guard shack. But I don't know if they got 8 miles like he did.
Well, 8 miles is a pretty good ways.
Exactly.
I mean, up ahead, though, they looks like, according to Google Earth, as I'm looking like here, has a town, but they have a full security, section there. But I guess I go back to this thing. What's interesting to me is knowing how much electricity is going to this facility. I mean, the amount of electricity is by far. I mean, what are they using it for? What kind of, is these the things that we see being experimented with in the sky? Is that what we're seeing? I think the answer to that is yes. I think that power is required for that.
Yeah, you just hit on something really big right there. Yeah.
One of the best kept secrets in ham radio is an online publication called the Spectrum Monitor. Have you ever heard of it? Well, if not, you need to go to their website, thespectrummonitor.com. That's thespectrummonitor.com. Each month, all kinds of pertinent articles pertaining to ham radio, shortwave, citizens band, scanning, Wi-Fi, you name it, it's in there. Color pictures, incredible writers writing these articles. You just have to check it out. You need to subscribe. Go to thespectrummonitor.com. Once again, the website is thespectrummonitor.com. Give it a look over and subscribe. thespectrummonitor.com. I want to tell you about something that's just absolutely, simply amazing. And you say, what's that? Well, it's the MFJ 939 Automatic Antenna Tuner. And you ask, what's so amazing about it? Well, it's very small, compact unit. It'll handle up to 200 watts. I mean, it'll handle a Drake TR-4, a Swan 350, or any modern radio that's out there. You simply plug the output into the 939 antenna tuner, give it about 5 to 10 watts, and it just tunes. No cable. You don't have to have a cable running between the tuner and the radio. It's utterly fantastic. Very quiet. You will love this thing, and it's priced unbelievably low. You need to go to the website, mfjenterprises.com, and check out the 939 antenna tuner, or just Google MFJ 939.
I mean, the transmission lines that run along the 95 freeway, they look exactly what's coming out of the power plants at Hoover Dam.
Well, there's multiple. There's some on the north. Yeah. There's the north side, the south side, and coming in from the west.
See, that raises a lot of eyebrows.
Yes, it does.
You know, there's a thing on, if you look at from Google Earth, you're looking at Area 51 as you go, I guess, I don't know. If you looked at the picture, it would be, I guess, to the south in the picture. But there's this weird thing. Almost looks like a monogram. You know, and it's not a square. It's kind of a triangular. No, it's not triangular. It's got like a maybe triangular top and a square on the bottom that's out there. And I've always seen that in pictures, and I thought, I wonder what that is. You know, I wonder what that could be. you know, somebody knows, but it's another part of the enigma. But that much power, my goodness, yeah. I mean, you know, so there you have it. You know, there you got people that claim they believe there's a Stargate there. Well, you know, maybe with that much power, maybe that's what they're generating, because that's a lot of power. I know we run a lot of power at this radio station. And matter of fact, Matt has parked under the antenna, and it burnt the coil packs out in his automobile. Just burnt them plumb up.
Did it really?
Yeah, parking under the antenna. But, you know, this isn't exactly a citizen's band radio. You know? You know, I see the kind of power we've got here. Matter of fact, one night we went off the air, couldn't figure it out. We got out there, and the power company came out, and everything looked relatively normal, so we couldn't figure out why. Well, the fuses blew up on the power pole on a couple. They had big transformers up there, and so they went ahead and said, "Oh well, we'll just, you know, we'll hook it back up and put another fuse in them, big fuses, whatever." And they put it in, and all of a sudden there was like this explosion, and what came down out of the transformer was a snake. He had crawled up there and shorted everything out, and when they put the power back on, they barbecued that guy, you know, and he came down and hit the ground, and of course he was black regardless of what color he was, and
right.
There was smoke rising up off the snake, but evidently he had slithered or did something to get up there to the top. We were all out there, and it was kind of funny because we were out power for a long time. And we hooked a ham rig up to one of the Robics, and we were talking to Europe at 2 o'clock in the morning like it was a local, and actually creating pileups because those antennas are big. They're long. They're not tall. It's these are wire antennas, you know. So, we didn't even try to disconnect the tuning unit from the transmitters. We just alligator clipped onto the rhombic antenna, you know, but that snake got fried. And I think about the amount of power that we're running here, and it's like dwarf pea size, not even measurable up against what they've got coming in out there at that place. I mean, there's no way you could even, there's not even a ratio that could compare it. So that makes you wonder, okay, what are they doing with all that power? You know, I say it's a big disco. They've got a bunch of Hafler power amplifiers out there, strobe lights.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and they're out there doing the boogie shoes, you know. I don't know, man, that's really, I mean, that's an intriguing thought. Now, Matt, you've done some reading up on some of this, I guess I want to say Stargate material or Stargate type material. What do you, anything going through your imagination right now?
Oh, it just the power intrigues me, the amount of electricity that's going out to that facility. You don't have that amount of electricity going out there just to run a base or, you know, some welding tools and stuff that you build airplanes with, that amount of electricity. I mean, when you're driving up 93, you have a ton of power right there, but off in the distance, way out in the distance, is extreme high voltage lines like you'd see coming from or going to, you know, power plant facilities as you're driving closer to it. Off of 93, coming in off of 93, correct me if I'm wrong, Christian, from Las Vegas, is that a power plant there? That you pass coming in off of 93?
Yeah. Yep. So right there where the 15 and the 93 start, a little bit up to 93, yep.
So there's a power plant that literally is sitting there. I mean, and the amount of solar facilities that are now, you know, in the area, if you start doing research, I mean, it's just like, what are they doing with all that electricity?
It's just miles of solar panels. And then when you get to Tonopah, that is just miles upon miles of solar fields out there.
We got an interesting email here. The gentleman's name is Martin, and he said, listening, you know, see, my name is Martin. gives his last name, radio listens with, and I don't know what this is, XE1024SWL code. I write you from the city, oh my goodness, my phone just quit, from the city of, oh Lord, pardon my ignorance,
Pachuca,
in the center of Mexico. And congratulate you on your beautiful evening program on 5085 kilohertz. And also to send a reception report that that same next. Goodness, I'm having a hard time reading this. And it's me. It's my eyesight, you know. Should have had somebody else read it.
Oh. Same next eye detail.
Next eye detail. Reception report. And it goes on down. And anyways, but he was listening tonight in the center of Mexico, and listening and wanting to send a signal report and tell us he had the radio on listening. That's cool. I appreciate
that. That's amazing.
I guess we probably need to wind this up. I mean, we've talked the legs, as they say here in Tennessee, we've talked both hind legs off the mule. But I've really enjoyed this, and I look forward to doing it again.
I have too.
And we need to get your friend on. I want to hear all about the fellow and the tall whites. I want to hear these stories. The other thing is, folks, remember that you can see all of Christian's videos at Adventures with Christian on YouTube. Go up there and look and watch these things. Plus, if you have a business, this is so cool. You can get your name on the new black mailbox he's putting up. And his plans are to he's got this thing. You're a welder, aren't you? Don't you? You do welding.
Yes.
So he's putting this thing together, and it's going to be really strong and sturdy, not like some of the mailboxes I've had up there, the infamous black mailbox at Area 51. You can get your business name welded to the side of this box, which I just think that's so cool.
It is really neat.
Oh, really? So
or just your name.
Yeah, there you go. And how do they go about getting a hold of you or doing this?
You just go on YouTube. You can go to my homepage, and there's a PayPal symbol right there, or go to any video and go to the description, and down below it'll show my Facebook page, and then it'll show a link to PayPal. Just go to PayPal and donate $50 or more. The more you donate, the higher you get on the box. I've had one person donate quite a bit, so I think he'll
be at the top.
That top.
Mm-hmm. Well, just, you know, the name being out. Well, you know, to think that for $50 you can get your name on the mailbox, I think that's just so cool. And I find that it's iconic. It's not a matter of advertising. You know, it's a matter of this thing is an icon. It's as famous as Area 51. The black mailbox goes back, I mean, to the very beginning inception of this. It's a part of, and I appreciate you going out there and restoring it. It's because it is. It's a, what do you want to call it? It's a landmark. It's a piece of American
history. It's a landmark, history. Exactly what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's a piece of American history. And
yeah.
You know, so anyway, I think that's very cool. Well, let's wind this up. Matt, any final comments or questions before we run along?
No, not at this point in time.
Okay, you sound like you're tired. Christian, are you tired? Are we keeping you up past your bedtime?
Just a little bit. I got to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning, but I'm doing just fine. But I have plenty more stories for you guys down the road, and I'll get my friend on, and he'll tell you all about those tall whites.
And folks, if you have questions, be sure and send them in to the email address I just gave you, email@wtww.us. And then when we have Christian back on again, we will ask the questions and get you the answers. David, final comments here.
I just want to say thank you so very much for coming on the show with us tonight. It's it's quite an experience to talk to you and listen to some of the things you talk about, and a lot of the videos that you document as well. You know, I mean, there's so many things that I don't want to say it's humdrum, but you're showing what normally happens out there. I mean, this is the day-to-day stuff, and to me, that's just really exciting to watch, and I love a lot of the stuff that you're putting up there. So, again, thank you so very much, sir, for coming on the show with us tonight.
You guys are very welcome. It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Once again, we've been listening to a Christian from Adventures from Christian off of YouTube. So, folks, that's who our guest has been, and it's been a wonderful evening. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. And